on the down low. Chicago Cubs manager Joe Maddon. Media and political personality Dan Proft. And Chicago filmmaker Tracy Bain. Now, here's your host, a man who didn't read the weather report for today, Justin Kaufman.
Wouldn't be the first time I'm stuck wearing Crocs. Ridiculous. I did not. I honestly, Pete, and I talk about this all the time. I don't know what it is about being a Luddite or not paying attention to the weather. It's right on my phone. But it was warm when I left the house this morning. It was warm when I came to work today around midday. So I decided I don't need a jacket today. I'll wear a sport coat to work. And I jumped out to get dinner. And can you say the word tuchus on the radio? I froze my tuchus off. It's unbelievable, though. If you look up and down Michigan Avenue, the fog has rolled in. And so it's super foggy outside, which gives it a very mysterious, noir-like quality to the rush hour tonight, which is not good for actual driving, although the times seem to be okay, but pretty impressive. But again, no jacket. I don't know how I'm going to get home, so we'll see. Anyone wants to... This is where I wish Steve Gadlin from the Frying Pan come up with an invention where I could borrow a coat, like a Lyft or an Uber, right? He did the Uber umbrella, which was great, but what about an Uber coat? Just call up and get a North Face coat delivered, and then I would bring it back like within the day. Yeah, something to think about. So download here, 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Wow, we got a great show tonight. I'm so excited to my guest tonight. Cubs manager Joe Maddon talking about new documentary American Creed, which is airing tonight at 10 o'clock on Channel 11. So excited to have him here. We'll talk about him growing up in the town of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, which is going through some turmoil, not unlike a lot of places in this country. But as more communities move in, it's a very it was a coal mining town. A lot of ethnic whites back in the day of Joe Maddon. His dad was or his grandfather was a coal miner. His dad was a plumber. And more in just recent times, more Hispanic communities have moved in. And the town has rebelled in the sense that they passed an ordinance about illegal immigration. They cracked down on all sorts of ways to separate the communities of Hazleton. And Joe Maddon has brought that to the community's attention with some projects and the integration projects, some other things he's working on. And from his experience of coaching baseball, understands there's a lot to be positive about communities, new communities coming in to help old communities, and understanding that we all live in the same place, this country called the United States of America. So Joe Maddon will be my guest to talk about his role in that documentary, American Creed, which airs tonight. Also tonight, I'm very excited to have my guest at the big table tonight, conservative media personality, political personality, another way to say it, Dan Proft. Dan Proft's name has become synonymous with the conservative movement here in the state of Illinois through his work at radio stations and different shows and television and media, but also his work with Super PACs and the Illinois Policy Institute and what he sees to be a failure of leadership from the governor. And so we'll talk with Dan Proft about the conservative movement, political movement in the state of Illinois. He's got a great background. It's impressive to look back to where he started. He started working with Lee Daniels back in the early 90s. Talk about where the Republican Party has gone, but also where conservative politics has gone in the state of Illinois. That'll be our conversation tonight at the big table. I'm looking forward to that. Heather Sharone and A.D. Quigg will be here from the Daily Line to talk about all the big stories in the news today, including O'Hare renovations, American Airlines like, hold up, CPS closures, and some more on the assessor's race as that continues to heat up. And a little bit later, we'll talk about the big Oscar party happening at the Siskel Center. And Tracy Baim is going to join us. I love Tracy Baim. Longtime editor, Windy City Times, also a filmmaker and producer herself. She's being honored at the big Hollywood on State event, which is coming up this weekend, the Oscar party to end all Oscar parties in the city of Chicago. I can't believe it's already Oscar time. We'll talk about that as well coming up. News, weather, and traffic tonight with Rob Martier and Esmeralda Leon. Production provided by Pete Zimmerman. I'm Justin Kaufman, and this is The Download, a show about Chicago starring those who know it well. All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back and we'll carry out. So stay with us. All right, so download 720 WGN. Let's carry out. All right, here today's top stories. Hope Hicks, White House communications director, expected to resign. This on the heels of her testimony in front of Congress on Russia. Who knows if it's connected. Hicks replaced Scaramucci in the office that has had continual communication problems. So even though Trump seemed to like Hope Hicks, maybe this is a good thing. Although the body count of the resignations in the White House is pretty staggering. You either believe that this list of castaways proves Trump is doing a poor job, or that Trump is the best and these posers couldn't keep up with the smartest guy in the world. One of the two. Today, Trump also had a televised meeting with top lawmakers over gun control. He did a good job of flustering both parties with a no-nonsense approach, but afterwards, many of the lawmakers seemed to be reluctant to take the president at his word. But to his credit, the president did seem to be about listening to ideas from lawmakers, regardless of party, and it was televised, so when the productive conversation deteriorates into partisan babble, we'll at least have this saved on our DVR. Throw parties. You want to see what conversation's like? Come over. New local polls, fresh out of the oven, which means we have front runners at the end of February. Right now, incumbent Governor Rauner has a 20-point lead over challenger Jeannie Ives, and J.B. Pritzker holds a 10-point lead over Daniel Biss. For the attorney general's race on the Democratic side, Kwame Raoul leads by 6 points over Pat Quinn. This poll was put out by the Paul Simon Institute, and it polled registered voters, not likely voters, which means there are a lot of ways that none of this is accurate. That's really the takeaway in the asterisk. American Airlines is against the O'Hare Airport renovation. They say it unfairly gives United Airlines competitive advantage. I love that United and American are the two airlines that Chicago has to placate before we can get a better airport. How about this? The airlines stop gouging and doing all the airline-y stuff they've been doing to destroy our ability to travel, and then you can hold up the building of a new Cinnabon in Terminal 3. We cool? Does that sound like a good deal? I think it's a good deal. Yesterday, President Obama made a surprise visit to the final public hearing for the Obama Presidential Center. He argued that the center would be good for the South Side. Gentrification won't be an issue. And they say they don't need to sign anything. They don't need to sign a community benefits agreement. Nothing. Because if you sign one thing, then everybody wants you to sign something, like he's giving out autographs. He sounds more and more like that middle manager trying to convince a company not to unionize. I mean, come on. I mean, it just means we can't be loosey-goosey like we used to be. I love that the Obama Presidential Center is coming to Chicago. I love it. And I love this coming to the south side of Chicago. But I'll be honest, not as thrilled that this will be built on existing parkland. I know. I didn't like it when the Star Wars guy wanted to do it. And I don't like it that the former president wants to do it, too. We're running out of park space in the city. I know it's a great city with a lot of park space. I get it. But I'm thinking down the road, because you can't undo it. I guess you could, but pave over, make it a parking lot. Chicago has an old rule that says you can't build on parks, right? Obama says he wants this to be like Millennium Park. Last time I checked, Millennium Park was built over old rail lines. It was a full-on death hazard. Remember that? Before that park was built. But in this case, Jackson Park, or at least part of it, it's going to be transformed for one use, to honor this president. And I like the design, and I love that it's in Chicago, but, I mean, this would be a great project to build an area where there's vacant land. I know, I get it. Everybody loves Obama, but I just feel like I love my parks a little bit more. And I don't have skin in the game. Community comes first. I get it. But just something to think about when you bring your hot dogs and your volleyball nets to set up for a nice summer afternoon, and Michelle Obama's standing there being like, turn your ass around. Again, I love that it's in Chicago. I love it. Yeah. Dick's Sporting Goods told the internet today they're going to stop selling automatic-style weapons at the store, which they did something similar after the tragedy in Newtown, which makes you wonder about when the rallying cry dies down, if they just sneak the guns back in the stores. But a very interesting move to get themselves out of that business. And I would say good job on putting your statement in a handy shareable form to dominate all of my social media feeds today. Thanks. I didn't want to know about anything else, just this. So thanks. Not to be outdone, in the last hour, Walmart announced they're going to stop selling automatic-looking weapons, whatever that means, and raise the minimum age to buy a gun to 21. Look at that. Free market at work. In weather, wow. The temperature's dropped. Snow tomorrow, too. Also, scientists are super worried about higher-than-normal temperatures in the Arctic. I wouldn't worry about it, though. I'm sure our leaders are all over it. They're going to tell us the game plan in just a second. Any second. Just check Twitter. In sports, former Bears running back Matt Forte announced today that he was retiring. The Bear ball carrier was a steady performer for a team that had issues in that area, being steady. When you look back on his career in Chicago, you got to put him up there with some of the greats. Maybe not as good as Walter or Gale Sayers, but I mean, I would put Matt Forte above Neil Anderson. And that's kind of where we're at, right? When you think about good old 35 versus 22. Right in that area, because Matt Forte played, what, eight seasons or so with the Bears? I don't know. I can make the argument for Matt Forte being the third best running back in Bears history. I could make that argument. Someone's going to text in now like, what about Johnny Redbone from 1932? Yeah, he was good too, but... To the new Bears! Today they announced they released linebacker Willie Young, who, let's face it, should have been released a few years back just for his fishing sack dance. He and Jared Allen should go do a show in Vegas called Sack Dance Pantomiming. All right, ladies and gentlemen, here he is, Willie Young, and he's got himself a bass after he got the sack. Check it out! Yeah, I'm not a big fan of sack dances when you're down 27 points. For a team that's biggest strength was a linebacking core last year, this is a peculiar move. Gerald Freeman, Pernell McPhee, and now Willie Young are gone, leaving only Danny Trevathan and Leonard Floyd left from last year's opening day starters. Maybe Nick Kwiatkowski develops, or maybe Ryan Pace and Matt Nagy have their eyes on some free agents, huh? Or maybe Urlacher's coming back, huh? Just saying, he's been around a lot lately. You may not recognize him with his new do. Also, sources say quarterback Mike Glennon will be released in mid-March. Now, right now, we play a couple of his greatest memories. Hit it, Pete. None? Nothing? Well, he got paid a lot of money, so. The Bulls lost again last night. They're back in the hunt for the worst team in the Eastern Conference. So all of that talk of tanking, they're doing it. And they should, because they're not going to get a huge return for that Pelicans number one they got in the Nico trade. The Pelicans just won their sixth straight, and they're currently the fifth seed in the West. So thanks again, Bobby Portis. This one's on you, man. The Cubs spring training report. Joe Maddon said his rotation already. Lester's going on opening day. Then Hendricks, Darvish, Quintana, and Chatwood. Man, that's a great pitching staff, huh? Former Cub bench coach Davey Martinez is now the manager of the Nationals, and he took a page out of Maddon's playbook. He brought live camels to Nationals camp today to symbolize their need to get over the hump, which is much different than the possum they brought to the Marlins camp. Just lay there. Yeah, if you're a baseball fan, you get that. The White Sox spring training report, Abreu went yard today, and another day without rookie phenom Eloy Jimenez, who has knee soreness. I wouldn't worry about it, though. You don't really need your knees to play outfield in the big leagues, so I think you're good. And finally tonight, a new study says that for people over the age of 90, alcohol is better than exercise for prolonging life expectancy. Something tells me that study was written by an 89-year-old alcoholic. Really? I mean, it makes sense. Nobody likes a 90-year-old exercise nut. But a 90-year-old drunk? So charming. Everybody loves him. The story's alone. All right, that's the carryout for February 28th, 2018. We loved having you February 2018, but okay, you've overstayed. You're welcome. March, you can come in now. Just wipe your feet. All right, coming up, A.D. Quigg and Heather Sharon are here from the Daily Line. We'll talk about the big news stories in Chicago politics today. Then coming up at 8 o'clock, we'll talk about conservative politics with Dan Proft. And a little bit later in the show, Chicago manager Joe Maddon. Stay with us. Rob Martier, how are you, bud?
Oh, man, not that I want to get to 90 years of age any sooner than, you know, hopefully I will, but I'm intrigued by that drinking story.
Right. If you have a better life expectancy if you drink than exercise over the age of 90.
So what does that mean for me now? My drinking to exercising ratio is a little off.
Yeah, you're going to have to figure that part out. This only applies to people over 90. Oh, so. All right. I don't know if it applies to your situation yet.
Well, I guess I'll get back to the gym then.
There you go. Thanks, Rob. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman from The Daily Line. It joins us every Wednesday, AD Quigg. And with her tonight, Heather Sherrone. Good to see you, Heather.
Thanks for having me, Justin.
AD, as always, good to
thank
see
you. Thank you.
The Daily Line, of course, covers all things Chicago, Cook County, and Springfield. And you can find it all at dailyline.net. All right, so let's get right into it today. I saw a tweet today that said that the resolutions at the city council meeting in Chicago was the longest it's ever been. I mean, there were so many resolutions before they actually got to business. It was staggering. How? I mean, is that accurate?
3 hours before a vote.
Three hours before a vote. I don't know if that's a record.
195 minutes, I counted.
And when I say resolutions, that's aldermen standing up and saying they want to say something about or honor somebody. What does that mean?
It's usually an honorarium.
Yeah.
And today was, you know, focused on gun violence, so everyone felt like they needed to say something.
Plus the departure of several longtime city employees who had their whole families there, and the aldermen wanted to pay tribute for decades, literally, of service. So that lengthened things quite a bit.
Is that all? I mean, it's not all led by Alderman Burke, but I know he's the guy who loves it.
Yes.
I mean, that's what he lives for.
He has speech writers.
Yeah.
He looks up the history. We'll tell you the whole history.
I was just going to say, it's Alderman Burke's history hour sometimes.
Yes.
That's great.
And Bible study.
Yeah, there you go. So, all right. So the history and Bible study meeting preceded the council meeting today. What came out of this meeting? Obviously, I saw the big story about the $20 million settlement. Obviously, that's a big deal because we continually have payouts over wrongful death and stuff like that. But then, of course, we'll transition to CPS closures. But, I mean, was that the big stuff coming out of City Hall, was the settlements?
That was, you know, the settlement is a lot of money. So the city will pay $15 million, and this is an especially horrible case dating back to 2009 when an off-duty Chicago police officer was drunk and slammed into the back of a disabled car on the Dan Ryan, trapping two young men who died. So he is currently in prison, but the family sued the city, alleging that the city essentially allowed him to be a problematic driver for more than a decade, nearly 20 years, and that it was the Chicago Police Department's code of silence that allowed him to be behind that wheel, not fearing that he was going to lose his job. And complicating all of that, the city failed to turn over an arrest report dating to 1992, where he was also drunk and fighting.
That's a hefty amount of money for taxpayers to be paying out for a police settlement, especially when it's not the kind that we're used to, like the money that was paid out for wrongful deaths, things like that,
right?
Like when it comes to shootings.
Yeah, and this is another, you know, a continued code of silence case where this man was pulled over for drunk driving previously and kind of let off the hook by fellow officers as well.
Well, not just pulled over, but had two separate incidents, crashes. One when he was in a squad car, and neither time was he breathalyzed. So the city, you know, didn't even enforce the law to that extent. And state law is clear that you have an accident, there's an allegation that you're under the influence, you have to be breathalyzed.
The other big story today that we heard some tape in some very passionate tape about protesters over the closures today. The Chicago Public School Board met and they put it forth. The plan is now been approved. This idea of closing, is it four schools in the Inglewood area to build a new high school?
Yes.
This plan has been controversial from the beginning. Early on, we talked about the strategy of putting community leaders behind the mayor when he announced it, and then there were community leaders like, those aren't the community leaders, I'm the community. What? Like, a lot of this kind of going on. And there has been a lot of outcry and protest over this controversial plan by CPS.
Right. So it's four Southside schools. CPS made a concession and said, we're not going to close them all right away. We'll phase out the closure of three of them over the next 3 years. And they're going to demolish one of them, Robeson High School, this summer. And they're going to build a brand new, shiny $85 million school at that site. There's also the merger of Ogden and Jenner, which WBEZ covered pretty extensively. And one more.
The closure of
NTA.
National Teachers Academy. And that was...
That's a big deal, yeah.
What a lot of the protests were around, because that is a mostly African-American school that's rated level one. And they're changing, essentially, the boundaries of that school because of growth in neighborhoods like Chinatown.
The South Loop,
And the South Loop, where it's sort of changed... The school district says what the school needs in that area was for. But, you know, the protesters really felt like it's an issue of educational equality, where the school is helping people and they're having, you know, really it taken away from them.
That is a going to be an interesting story for communities like the South Loop or the West Loop or areas that are somewhat new that don't have the infrastructure that some of the more established neighborhoods have had, where the CPS is going to have to make decisions. There was some pushback in the West Loop when they were doing some annex or building on some new buildings there, and now you're seeing pushback in the South Loop. It comes down, and protesters are saying, it's here we go once again, where affluent communities get what they want and communities of colors don't.
Right.
Yeah. And what's interesting is that this is the happening under new CEO Janice Jackson, who took over from Forrest Claypool. This is really a plan that was developed under Claypool's tenure and his leadership. And I think there was some hope among protesters that she would take another look at it and perhaps, you know, change course. And she did to some extent by acknowledging that the schools won't all close
right, the phase out
at
right.
the end of this school year, but that they will be phased out.
Yeah, the phase out is going to be hard, though, because they are under-enrolled schools, and the more students that leave, the more cash leaves with them, and then you've got, you know, half-filled classrooms and no extracurriculars for a lot of these students. So I think it'll be hard these next 3 years, and hopefully there'll be some kind of accommodation, but this won't be the end of school closings
either. The big voice of and body that's behind the protesters is Chicago Teachers Union, and this Teachers Union has stepped up and said, we need a little bit of pause on this plan because we want to learn more about it. They didn't get that, and they have said from the get-go that if you do this, if you approve this plan, it is in violation of our labor contract. Yes, indeed, Chicagoans, that labor contract that for a couple of years, you know, last time around, we thought there were going to be a strike. There was a strike one time before, but CTU says this is in violation of that contract.
It sort of dates back to the whole brouhaha over the school closures almost 5 years ago now, where they closed those schools and said, okay, we promise we won't close any schools for the next 5 years unless there are extreme circumstances. The Chicago Public School official says, well, we're not doing it. This has been demanded from us by the community. And then you're back into that definition of who's the community and who represents the community. So that's how they're getting around it. CTU, you know, has said they plan to challenge that to the extent
that they can. To be honest, I mean, from sitting in this chair, you can understand when if you're a listener and maybe this doesn't affect you and you don't live in the area and you're like, oh, I'm kind of interested in it. This is it goes back to a longstanding disagreement or distrust between communities and the public schools, because there will be things that are put on paper even that are like, we won't do this, and then you do it, and there's always been this conflict that there isn't this bond, there isn't this trust between communities and the schools because of situations like this where they say, well, the community wants it, so you know what, the contract is null and void. That's hard to stomach.
I think part of the upset is also because these closures were ordered today by a board appointed by Mayor Rahm Emanuel, not elected by the people of Chicago. So CTU has been pushing for a return to the elected school board for years, right. Decades. I mean, it's been a longstanding demand. And this, I think, has added fuel to that fire, which, you know, every poll I've ever seen of this issue show deep and widespread support for a return to an elected school board.
Yeah. The question is how do you do it?
Yeah.
How do you keep it from getting there's no way to get around it becoming political. I think the formation and how Springfield goes about it is going to be really interesting.
Yeah. AD Quigg, Heather Sharone, The Daily Line in studio tonight. We'll take a quick break. We'll come back. Let's talk about O'Hare. And if we can, it feels like every week we do this. And then the assessor's race. And we're like, maybe next week. But yep. We'll get to it. Stay with us. Heather Sharone, AD Quigg in studio tonight from The Daily Line, dailyline.net. They join us every Wednesday to talk about what's happening in Chicago, Cook County, and Springfield when it comes to politics. Today, city council reigns, but the big story was about O'Hare Airport renovations contract time. So exciting.
There is a song for contracts. Contract time.
Contract time. So it seemed like this was a big feel-good story yesterday or the day before. And then today, American Airlines says, nah, we're not having it. We don't like this. What's the word here?
Well, I think the mayor expected it to be sort of a love fest. And look at what we're doing to improve your ability to catch up. Plane to anywhere in the world at O'Hare, and we're going to bring in all this money and all these visitors and all these business people to O'Hare. And that lasted until about 9:05 this morning. And then American Airlines put out a statement saying that United, which is the other big carrier at O'Hare,
based here in Chicago,
right, had made a secret deal with City Hall to get more than its fair share of gates. And there's nothing that makes journalists sit up
than the word
straighter
secret.
Than yeah. secret deal and secret city hall secret. In the same sentence.
So are they right in that sense? Was there a secret deal that
well,
Rahm had?
The mayor said that was ridiculous, and that essentially, you know, he wants to foster competition between United and American, but that the days of United and American dictating what they want to the city and the city providing it O'Hare are over.
Mother may I, he said.
Yes.
The days of Mother may I are over.
Yeah. So he also made a point of saying that you know, United and American aren't the only airlines at O'Hare anymore. You know, you can, you know, fly on anyone. So it's an interesting sort of new era for O'Hare, where the city is really asserting its control over the airfield and making it, as Rahm Emanuel said today, you know, sort of a state-of-the-art, best
global
in the business,
hub.
A global
but
hub.
Don't you need United Airlines and American Airlines? More United than American, because I've lived in Chicago. I know that the United has sway when it comes to this being their hub and their being from this town. Don't you need buy-in from those airlines to be able to push an agenda of renovation or rehab at the airport?
There's certainly an argument over whether this could trigger lawsuits or whether it could tie it up in red tape. This is, you know, sort of the end point of 18 months of negotiation. It doesn't necessarily seem like it's all the way there.
Right.
But, you know, it will, you know, there isn't any taxpayer money, and there's nothing aldermen love more than being able to spend other people's money to do things that
so
are
so this is
great.
Paid for it's by an,
yeah,
the carriers.
It's an $8.5 billion project overall. It's going to take 10 years, and it's paid for by the lease that the airlines pay for. So we're going to have added gates, more flights, maybe more airlines. But the other thing that happened today was Latino and Black caucus aldermen were like, we want a piece of this. And you, the city, have done a poor job in ensuring that there are minority contractors on big deals like
that's
this.
That's interesting, yeah.
So this deal is a no-go unless the numbers are where we want them to be, which is another...
Yeah.
Wrinkle to this.
And this has sort of been bubbling under the surface at City Hall for many months, because Latinos are now essentially a third of Chicago's population, but they make up only about 17% of the city's workforce. And this is something that sticks in the craw of Latino aldermen.
Absolutely.
So they see this as, you know, a bargaining chip, essentially, to say, you know, you have to do more to address the fact that minority companies are not sort of getting, you know, they're not sharing in the pie. They're not getting the right share. And of course, that, you know, in some way brings them in contact, you know, sort of in conflict with the Black caucus, because they want their
they
proper
want their share
yeah. as well.
But
if they
team up, so there are enough Black and Latino aldermen on city council that they can run the show. There's 29 of them out of the 50. So if they say, all right, let's team up and make sure that we get the minority contracts that we want, and we can hold this contract up until that day comes.
Wow.
Yeah.
And what's stopping them from doing it? Is it old loyalties? Is it the idea that they're still loyalty to party bosses like Mayor Emanuel or Speaker of the House Mike Madigan
or
Ed Burke and other people?
Both caucuses have members that are friends with Emanuel and are not friends with Emanuel. So there are some who are probably more likely to break. But this is so much money that maybe this is the one thing that can actually bring them together.
There was so much made about Mayor Daley in his day placating or compromising to make sure that communities of color were included in this stuff. Maybe not to the extent they wanted to be. Obviously, you can look back at the data and say, oh man, that didn't happen, or it did happen. But there seemed to be that the blueprint in the playbook to be a successful mayor who continues to be reelected without any challenge is to include those communities. So is that happening? If you see that the numbers are out of whack and both the Latino caucus and the Black caucus aldermen are like, we're not getting our share of these. Is that a problem for the sitting mayor of Chicago?
I don't think it's helping him, because, you know, we sit through these committee meetings where there's ever any contract. Okay, well, how many African Americans do you have on your board? How many Latinos do you have in your senior management? So this is a frequent and constant refrain that pressures Rahm Emanuel to deal with these sort of issues. It's difficult because, on one hand, you have to be qualified, you have to go through the screening process, you have to, you know, win certification. And then, you know, if there are only 10 firms that, you know, are certified to do this job and 9 are owned by white people, you know, there's not a whole lot that the mayor can do.
I could talk about that all night long. What we're not going to talk about is the assessor's race, because we're out of time. But next week, let's lead with it, right? I mean, we do this every week. This is the third week in a row that I feel, AD, that we've said, Andy, we're going to talk about this great assessor's race next week.
Well, and now we're 3 weeks out from the primary, so it's like crunch time.
Let's lead next week. Let's honor that.
I'm going to hold you to
it. Let's hold ourselves to it, because it is interesting. It's a fascinating race, and it's important, obviously, with everything that's coming out. But AD Quigg, Heather Sharon from The Daily Line, thedailyline.net. You can find out all their work. They cover Chicago, Cook County, and Springfield when it comes to politics. Thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Rob. Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up in the 9 o'clock hour, Cubs manager Joe Maddon joins us. Talk about his role in the new documentary American Creed, which is airing on Channel 11 tonight at 10 o'clock. We'll talk about his hometown of Hazleton, Pennsylvania, and where he believes we can all find better understanding through what we consider to be the American ideal. So we'll talk with manager Joe Maddon coming up. Also, a little bit later, we'll talk about the big Oscar party, the end-all Oscar parties down at the Siskel Center this weekend. Coming up in the 10 o'clock hour, Greg Flam's back to do the swap meets. So we'll have that, 312-981-7200. Well, my guest tonight at the big table wears a lot of different hats, from hosting a morning radio show to running a super PAC. Dan Proft has become a leading voice for Illinois conservatives. And in this election cycle, that voice has become louder than usual, thanks in part to a rift between conservatives and the incumbent Republican governor, Bruce Rauner. Proft has led the charge to push the governor and his policies towards the right and has put his weight behind challenger Jeannie Ives. Tonight, let's talk about the state of conservative politics in the state of Illinois and beyond. Dan Proft, the entrepreneur, the media mogul, the former Republican candidate for governor. Thanks for being my guest at the big table, Dan.
Pleasure. Great to be with you. And I'm happy to talk Oscars, too, if you'd like.
Sure. And, the second half of the interview will be all Oscars.
Yeah.
Today, the Paul Simon Institute puts out a poll of registered voters, says that Governor Rauner has a 20-point lead on Jeannie Ives. What's your first take on that?
Well, and I think it shows that Jeannie Ives is closing. I mean, remember, she starts out as one of 118 state reps that, you know, nobody outside of the western suburbs, DuPage County, where she's been the rep for the last 6 years, really knew her. So you start out down 45 points to a guy who's got $100 million worth of branding and 3 years as governor behind you, behind him, I should say. And so so it takes time, and this is a compressed schedule, to introduce yourself, to expose Governor Rauner, to present the contrast to the voters, and to crystallize the whole thing into a single question that people are thinking about when they go into the polls. And, oh, by the way, the governor gets to play, too. I mean, I know there's a lot of attention being paid to the tens of millions of dollars that J.B. Pritzker has spent in the primary thus far, but Governor Rauner is approaching $20 million in the primary so far, and we don't have that kind of wherewithal. Jeannie certainly doesn't have personal wealth, and so it's just a different thing. So it takes some time.
But you knew that going in.
No,
knew that he's got the money and the resources.
No question. But we also knew that his support was a mile wide and an inch deep. And I think that's what the Simon Institute poll is telling you. For an incumbent governor with all of those advantages and all this time in his own party to barely be at 50% 3 weeks out, it's a real indictment, and it really is an indication of the unrest that Republican Party primary voters have with respect to this governor per the policy choices he made. I mean, it's also worth noting, like, I'm 45 years old, it's never happened in my lifetime, that you have state legislators in open revolt against the governor. I mean, the House Republican floor leader, Peter Breen, endorsing Jeannie Ives, and a handful of other leading conservative reform state legislators endorsing Jeannie Ives over the incumbent governor of their own party. That's highly unusual.
Dan, what happened to you guys? You guys used to be buddies. You and Governor Rauner you were behind him in his election campaign. I mean, what happened in the last 4 years that turned a wing of his party against him?
The policy choices he made. I mean, you're right. You wanted to believe that he was going to be the shakeup artist. He was going to be the guy that was going to challenge the established order in both parties in Springfield and do so sensibly so he could move a reform agenda and kind of reshape the balance of power in the state. But in point of fact, what actually happened over the first 2 years is he kind of disappeared. And then he showed he was really a political neophyte in terms of some of the strategic errors he made, the battles he picked, the way he chose to prosecute those battles. But then ultimately, it was the series of policy decisions over the last half of 2017, it was just one betrayal after the other. It was one lie consummated in advancing the other side's political agenda after another, to the point where you just said, well, if we're going to have an enemy inside the perimeter advancing the other side's agenda, then what do we need a Republican Party for?
Now, we talked about it in this program, Pete and I have talked about it a number of times, that I'm surprised that more people don't point out the strategic victory of Democrats and Mike Madigan to even put a bill in front of anyone about an abortion issue that wasn't an issue at the time. I mean, there's you're not. It's not even. It shouldn't have even been there. But the idea that, I mean, that was introduced and brought to the governor's desk as a trap, and there really isn't anywhere to go. What do you do if you're the governor in that situation? If you said you don't really want to get into social issues, yet the legislature brings you the biggest social issue of all time.
Well, I mean, it's not just House Bill 40, the taxpayer funding of abortion, which is violative of sort of the truce on the issue, kind of the Hyde Amendment at the federal level, but it's also been applicable locally. And you're right to point that out. I mean, just understand something. When Democrats had supermajorities in both the House and the Senate and Governor Quinn, they didn't move that legislation. They didn't move sanctuary state. No. They didn't move trans birth certificates. They didn't move the kind of entire retinue of the left's social policy agenda because Madigan, I guess to his credit, understands that if you just wait long enough, there's a surrender Republican coming down the road who will do all our bidding for us. And they found him in Bruce Rauner. But the easy out for Rauner on House Bill 40, the no social agenda guy, which is another canard, and people shouldn't believe that. You may not want to have a social policy agenda, but other people get to participate in the process too, and they do. And that's what Governor Rauner found out. But the easiest way to say, we are a state that is functionally bankrupt. We've got $250 million in debt. We've got $10 billion in unpaid bills. Now is not the time to open up a new open-ended entitlement, which is what taxpayer funding of abortion on demand all 9 months is. He could have made a financial argument. In fact, that was the argument he was initially making in telling members of both the House and Senate Republican caucuses that he would veto the bill if it got to his desk. He didn't want it to come to his desk, but if it got there, he would veto it. That's what he told Cardinal Supich. And then he signed it.
And I don't have the political acumen that you do or even, you know, can play at the level of observing what's happening there. But it seems to me, the layman who's just paying attention, that it seemed that damned if you do and damned if you don't. If he vetoes the bill, don't you run the risk of upsetting a moderate voting bloc that may be looking to be the cornerstone for a reelection campaign? If you don't, then you anger conservatives. I mean, you're kind of in a rock and a hard place.
No, I mean, this is the Hyde Amendment. But at the local level, this has been the status quo for generations. So if you just extended the status quo, this sort of de facto truce, as I've described it, then you just kind of move on.
He should have kicked the can.
I mean, and here's the polling on this. An overwhelming supermajority of Republican primary voters oppose it, but a supermajority of general election voters oppose it too. A lot of pro-choice individuals who say, I believe in a woman should have the right to choose, but don't make me pay for your choice. There's a lot of pro-choice people who have that position as well, which is why this truce has been effective and has stood the test of time until Governor Rauner. I mean, understand how radical this is. He is the first governor in U.S. history to initiate taxpayer funding of abortion on demand all 9 months. First governor in U.S. history, and he's supposed to be a Republican.
Dan Proft, my guest in studio tonight. We'll continue our conversation. I want to. When you come back, let's talk about the state of conservative politics. I mean, obviously, you're mounting a challenge against the Republican Party when it comes to the gubernatorial race here in the primary. But beyond that, I mean, we're seeing a lot with Donald Trump and the way that conservative politics are playing out at a national level. How does it reflect and how does it play out here in the state of Illinois? Dan Proft, my guest at the big table. So stay with us. That story is funny. Maria Pappas is off. Maria Pappas was here last night talking about how great the website was, all this stuff. And then I got a press release saying that they're giving an extra day because the website failed.
Can we get her back in?
It wasn't her website. It was the Chase website, right? But that was just interesting that we just had this conversation last night.
Another another grand success story for Cook County government.
Right. Dan Proff, my guest tonight at the big table, a long time, I called you a media mogul, but it's kind of true. I mean, you do radio, you do TV, you're in the newspaper business.
Yeah, mogul, I think, is you're kind of bastardizing that word, but okay.
Okay. I mean, you grew up in Wheaton, Illinois.
Yes.
Where did you adopt the conservative framework for your ideology? When did that start?
You know, I would say it's influenced by my faith. I was raised Catholic, and I take my faith seriously, so that's part of it. But my parents were not political, really. My grandfather, my mom's side, was a Chicago firefighter, and then he was a bit of a ward healer in retirement, so he was a little bit more kind of politically in tune. And I remember having a lot of conversations with him about Chicago politics growing up. But I would say it was really faith and then reading. Intellectual pursuits, getting educated. My parents sacrificed, sent me to a great grade school, St. Mike's in Wheaton, great high school, Bennett Academy in Lisle. But it was at high school and then college where I just started reading, some that was part of classwork and some that was interest that was sparked because of the classwork. The great philosophers and economists across the ideological spectrum. And it just kind of thought about it myself as I read more and more, and it seemed to me that economists like Friedman and Hayek and von Mises had it right, and economists like Keynes didn't. Philosophers like Bastiat and Bentham had it right, and philosophers like Rousseau and Nietzsche didn't. It was really just reading and thinking and talking to people and learning.
Just poking around in your history, you've always kind of considered yourself an outsider in the way that you were on campus with an alternate newspaper.
Yeah.
You have done a lot
not
of things.
Not the most popular guy at Northwestern during my time.
Guy. Sure, but the point being that even your approach to politics and being a conservative, you always found yourself sort of being the odd man out.
There's no question. I mean, I guess, it's been some interesting trials by fire, Northwestern being a good example of that. And frankly, Republican Party politics in Illinois being a good example of that. For my time here, I mean, my first race was my first gig out of college in 1994. And then I went to work for Lee Daniels. So I've kind of been on the inside, a little bit on the outside formally, but I've always been on the outside intellectually because the Republican Party in this state has been a combine party, to borrow a John Cassism. For most of my time in Illinois politics, we've been kind of the junior partner to the Chicago Democrats, which is why you've had one party domination of the state and the city for so long. I think that's always been a failed approach. We took the same patronage model and we said the Republican Party is going to also distribute the spoils of war to their friends when they win. We're just going to do it a little bit more efficiently, which I never thought was a particularly compelling value proposition, but that's what we've done. And then the demise of George Ryan broke right. apart our side of the combine, and it became a warlordocracy for the ensuing almost two decades Bruce Rauner got here. And then that was going to hopefully reconstituted as a policy-oriented reform party, and then Bruce Rauner betrayed everything he said he was going to do. So, it's not been 40 years wandering in the wilderness for me, but it's been 25.
Well, I think about back to the mid-90s and the Republican Party in Springfield, at least when you talk about Lee Daniels or Pate Phillips.
Yeah, right.
And others who, when you think even Governor Jim Edgar and before that Governor Thompson, this was a Republican state. It had Republican majorities. Was it run differently? Was the party, like you said, just a different bastardized version of what the Democrats were doing in Chicago at that time? Or was there a different philosophy approach to the Republican Party with those players?
I think it was run a little bit differently. Pate Phillip and Lee Daniels are conservatives. I mean, they have a foundation. They did have a foundation in a way that the leadership of the Republican Party for the last 15 years has had no foundation. It's completely transactional, completely politically expedient. So there was a policy agenda that was being pursued at the time, which has largely since been abandoned. But a lot of the problems that have fully metastasized in 2018 were part of big government Republicans' choices, from Jim Thompson to Jim Edgar with his pension ramp, to even some of the choices that were made in the General Assembly with under Republican leadership, particularly in the 90s when Republicans had this control of the Senate for the entire decade. I mean, of course, in the House, it's been Madigan for all of the last, you know, nearly four decades, minus the Gingrich Revolution years of 94 to 96. So that's sort of a different story. So it was a little bit better, but we were still participating in, in the kleptocracy that was being formed and now has been kind of fully imposed on the state. And this is why Illinois is the worst governed state in U.S. history.
There was a lot of optimism with structural reforms coming forward and the victory in 2014 with Governor Romney.
Yeah.
And a lot of that, as you mentioned, had this idea of possibly a shift in Republican politics in the state of Illinois to focus more on policy than some of the stuff you just mentioned. At the beginning, and we saw this, and you played a role in you know, being a mouthpiece, and I don't mean in a negative way, but like you were on board with this. You saw what quickly became a, I don't even know what to call it, like an ideology fight, this fight to the death between Democrats and Republicans at the highest form of government in the state of Illinois. I mean, to the point where we didn't have budgets, and it was the first time, it seemed, in a long time, maybe Blagojevich trial notwithstanding, that the Illinois people, we got really interested in what was happening in Springfield. We got really interested in saying, oh, wow, we don't have a budget? Is that a good thing? Is that a good thing that we start to pay attention to this?
Well, I mean, it's a good thing. I don't think we pay enough attention. I don't think people pay nearly enough attention. Not nearly enough people pay nearly enough attention to what's going on in the city, in the county, in the state. They don't. I mean, we didn't have a budget for, 2.5 years. By the way, we haven't had a balanced budget in 20 years, right? I mean, the whole thing, this whole state is one Ponzi scheme after the other. And what people need to understand, if they don't already, if they've not heard of Bernie Madoff, is Ponzi schemes always end badly. And the longer they go on, the worse they're going to end and the more people are going to be hurt. Everybody's going to be hurt, and some people are going to be hurt more than others. And what I would say, I mean, yes, I was on board and I was hopeful because you have to give somebody a chance, and you didn't know exactly what Bruce Rauner was going to do because he was an outsider, because he didn't have a policy record per se. I mean, in the philanthropic pursuits, but that's a little bit different. But one of the things I said the entire time, and why they never really trusted me, is I had grave concerns that the problem with Bruce Rauner is not that he was friends with Rahm Emanuel. It's that he is Rahm Emanuel. It's that he's without core. He is transactional. He is expedient. He's a press release politician. He's not a policymaker. And that's exactly who Rahm has turned out to be.
But you knew that in the campaign in 2014, because that's when that all came out.
Well, that was the concern I expressed. Yeah. But then he wins and you say, okay, well, we've got this guy and he said a bunch of good things. So let's, encourage him and be hopeful that he's going to do some of those good things. And it's not completely devoid of doing some of those good things, or at least attempting to, and being stymied by Democrats in charge of the General Assembly. But he didn't do nearly enough good. He wasn't nearly as shrewd or aggressive or principled as he needed to be successful.
There are several war stories and great political stories in history in this state, in the city. You think of Harold Washington, of being stymied by council, being stymied by the General Assembly. And the way out is compromise, or the way out is you have to have some political resolve to be able to get your agenda through and possibly not get everything you want. When you look back on the first 4 years of Governor Rauner, you wonder if he didn't understand those lessons, or he wanted to take a different tack, because it doesn't seem like much came out of it in the form of trying to compromise, play the party against itself. You know, this idea that you're going to have to give up something to get something.
Well, I mean, although I think you could argue the converse as well, is that there was never any time to compromise because he was so busy negotiating against himself. He needed to involve other people in that negotiation. Right. I mean, he started out with a 44-point plan, and it quickly disintegrated down to a 5-point plan. I got to have this, I got to have that. And then the got to haves turned into maybes, maybe not. So he spent so much time kind of befuddled world and in internal conflict that you never had bright lines, either for Republicans to fall in line, for him to coalition build and say, this is a centerpiece and I want it and I'm willing to horse trade to get it because this is a structural reform that will last beyond me. I think he's sort of like Rahm, like a Barack Obama. He thinks if he makes a pronouncement, then it shall be done. And that's just not how politics works. It is mechanics. It is coalition building. It is painstaking. And you have to be relentless. And that's just not Bruce Rauner.
Dan Prof, my guest at the big table tonight, the media guy? I mean, mogul is not good
just
enough.
Media
everyman. Dan Prof, my guest at the big table. We'll take a quick break. We'll get Rob's news. We'll come back and we'll continue our conversation here on The Download. Stay with us. Thanks, Rob. It's a Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. My guest in studio tonight, Dan Prof. He is a morning radio host, The Morning Answer, WIND. He also runs a super PAC, and he is a leading voice for Illinois conservatives. We're talking about Illinois politics and conservative politics and policy. You know, as we have seen this feud in the Republican Party between a more conservative faction and the governor and the incumbent governor, it has brought us more to the discussion about what is a conservative in 2018. I mean, with the president that's in there in the White House right now as a Republican and the conservatives and what we've seen in the last couple of years, has it changed from the idea of the early days of modern conservatism when we talk about Bill Buckley and even Ronald Reagan and the heroes of the conservative movement? Is it different today than it was back then?
Well, I mean, I think Trump is certainly different than those other names you mentioned. There's no question about that. I'm not sure conservatism changes with the party leader. I don't think it should, because then we become a cult of personality party, which I think we should always guard against. I think sometimes because it's so binary and it's like our team versus their team, we lose this idea that these individuals that represent us are not our betters. They're our temporary representatives. And, you know, this just in, there's a lot of people out there that can be a member of Congress, that can be a United States Senator. Let me tell you, I know a lot of them. I know enough of them to know that these are not necessarily the dizzying intellects you've been led to believe that they are. So it's the whole kind of the thing that's the most disturbing to me is cult of personality politics. I don't like it. I don't like the deference that we pay to our elected officials. We're not supposed to treat the ruling class like the ruling class. They act like the ruling class because too many people treat them like they are a ruling class, and they shouldn't be. So and Trump is I wouldn't call Trump particularly, you know, philosophically conservative or having a philosophic grounding. I think he's pursued a lot of conservative reform policies, and I'm very happy about that. But I also would not be surprised where there are going to be things that he does, including, for example, the institution of tariffs more recently, which I completely oppose. That is mercantilism. That's not conservatism. That's not free market economics. So there's always going to be that struggle, and there'll be some disagreements within the party. I don't think that breaks up the party, but I think you have to separate the conservative philosophical foundation of the Republican Party from kind of electoral and the day-to-day machinations of politics.
I was going to say, I consider you to be my conservative historian, but when the Republican Party and conservatism become bedfellows? When was that? I mean, is that something that just stood the test? Has that just been life itself? Or?
Well, in the modern era, I think you mentioned the two names. It was God, Man at Yale. It was Bill Buckley, the founding of National Review. We just are remembering the 10-year anniversary of his passing this week, as a matter of fact. And then, of course, the time for choosing speech that Reagan gave in 1964 at the Goldwater Convention being consummated when Reagan was elected president of the United States in 1980 and ushered in the greatest peacetime expansion of U.S. economy since, in the 20th century. And so it was the idea that the Republican Party is a party of strong national defense, anti-communism, but ultimately free minds, free markets, and a free society. Hmm. And I think those are the three legs of that stool.
Can you, I mean, as you just said, it's three legs of the stool. I mean, can you be social conservative and not a fiscal conservative? Can you be a hawk and not interested in what we do with our budgets? I mean, when you talk about conservatism as we know it, can you split those ideals?
Yeah, I mean, some of those terms I'm not sure mean anything anymore because they've been so misappropriated. It's funny. Everybody's a fiscal conservative, and particularly here in Chicago and Illinois, every single person is a fiscal conservative, and we are the worst fiscally run state in the country. These fiscal conservatives are killing us. I think fiscal conservative is a way to say, social liberal.
No, but isn't fiscal conservative in my mind is shrinking government,
yes,
lowering costs, being efficient, and removing the welfare state?
That's
what I consider to be fiscal conservative.
I think that's a more accurate definition, but it's not one that's properly applied to too many people these days. I mean, the problem is you still have this spoils of war mentality. You still have people that are afraid to reorder benefits once they've been conferred, even if they turn out to be detrimental to the beneficiaries, because they just don't want to take the heat. I think one of the things that just thinking about the Republican Party here, but certainly over time and thus the rise of Trump, the Republican Party at the national level, the quality that's been lacking, if I could boil it down to a single quality that's been lacking, is courage. We when we are given the opportunity, we're not who we said we would be. This was Rand Paul's Jeremiah on the Senate floor not so long ago about lifting the sequestration spending caps.
Yeah.
We're a conservative party when we're not in power, right, and then there is no conservative party when we are.
Yeah, and that is true on both parties.
Well,
and
sure.
Because political risk, I mean, the word risk, it's funny, I'll do a lot of business conversations. People come in and you talk to entrepreneurs about risk and failure. And people will always say, you have to have it in business. You can't be afraid of it. You know, risk is important. Failure is important. You learn from it. Not so in politics. Risk is a strategy. Risk is they get around the table and nine people tell you what they think is what's the aversion, what possibly could go wrong, and it's mitigated. We don't have risk in politics or courage in politics,
right,
to do stuff that is good for the country but maybe bad for the party.
Or bad for the individual.
Or bad for the individual.
Because everybody's protecting their little fiefdom.
Right.
Everybody's protecting their sinecure. And that part of the problem is that being a state rep, much as being a member of Congress or a governor, it's too good a gig. And so it breeds permanency. So, I mean, look, the members of the General Assembly in Illinois, of the 177 members, the percentage of those individuals that could otherwise get a part-time job that pays them $75,000 a year where they vest for a pension after 10 years and get lifetime health insurance is very small. These are not people that have necessarily all kinds of options out there. And so it's a good gig and they don't want to lose it. And
right. So
they're risk averse because we may have nothing to lose with how badly the state's run, but they have something to lose, which is their little piece of the turf. And that's a real problem because it inhibits people being courageous on the policy front and doing things that they otherwise know to be true in terms of positively impacting people's lives. C.S. Lewis, courage is the formation of every virtue at its testing point. In other words, if you're not courageous, you cannot possess any other virtue you say you have because you will fold when you are tested. And isn't that the story that we see retold time and again in the city and the state? We don't have a virtuous political party, either one of them, because very few people in either are courageous.
Right. And I wonder, listening to you, I mean, that can be applied to issues on both sides of the aisle.
No question.
And it's interesting to hear you talk, because there may be some who said, oh, when Dan Prof's on, when he's on his show, he's just railing against Democrats or against liberalism or anything of that nature. But really, to hear those words, I mean, that can apply to abortion, as we just talked about, or that can talk about gun control, which is happening today. This idea of lawmakers standing up to interests, even at the detriment of the individual.
Well, I mean, yeah. I mean, depending on your perspective, you may have a different view on what constitutes courage. I understand that. But yeah, I'm a Republican by necessity, but a conservative by choice. The Republican Party is the vehicle, being a member of the Republican Party isn't supposed to be a suicide pact. So if they violate everything that is fundamental to the principles that they espouse, that that I believe, then I'm not going to participate in that. And I don't know why that's so problematic. And, you know, and then the other side just has a completely different worldview that's government centric, yeah. not individual, not freedom centric. And that's why, you know, that divide is too much of one for me to bridge on most issues.
I mean, let's talk. I thought it was interesting. I was watching a video with you and you were talking about morality. And really, you were applying it to fiscal conservatism. You're applying it to this concept of lawmakers in Washington or here in the state of Illinois who would vote for something that can't pay itself, whether yeah. it be pensions, benefits, whether yeah. it's the tax code, whatever it might be where this is going to add to the debt, that there's a lack of morality in politics. Where do you think that comes from? Because there used to be, and I think hypocrisy, I always get angry over hypocrisy, where someone will say, just like you said with Rand Paul, we are just not the party that will raise the debt ceiling unless we need to raise a debt ceiling. And I feel like overall, that's really what, to me, I feel makes me less interested in politics, is this idea that the hypocrisy and morality, following your lead about, you know, at a certain point, they will make these decisions that I don't know how you can make.
Well, I mean, I think we should speak about fiscal issues in moral terms. Every single law that is passed that governs a free society is a reflection on somebody's morality, whether it's a tax and spend issue or an issue regulating interpersonal conduct. It's a morality issue. And so we should talk about it that way. I mean, for example, when you break the intergenerational compact that Edmund Burke spoke about, what you owe to your ancestors who left you this thing and what you owe to your progeny to leave it better than you found it. When you break that by saying, no, 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 it's all me, me, me right now. And if that leaves it worse off for my progeny, then that's their problem. And that's what politics has become. And this is the state that's the worst example of that. Right. I'm going to confer a pension benefit I know we can't pay because I'll be out of here by the time all the bills come due. I'm going to go and tell everybody on the campaign trail that, you know who I'm running for? You know who I'm fighting for in Springfield or D.C.? I'm fighting for the development of the disabled. I'm fighting for the truly vulnerable, who we all believe should be provided with state services because they need them through no fault of their own. You hear that from every politician in this state. And yet Illinois is consistently one of the worst states in the nation in providing services to people we all agree should be provided those services. So what is it? We $250 billion in debt after the highest combined state and local tax burden in the country. So after all this money that we've taxed and borrowed and spent, how is it we could be last in the nation or near last in the nation in providing services to the developmentally disabled? Because they're lying. They're lying,
yeah,
and
they're
using
hypocritical, right.
And they're using the truly vulnerable as cannon fodder for a big government agenda from which they derive no benefit. That is so cynical. It's barbaric, is what it really is. I mean, I really think it's not. We're just not a unstable state. We're a barbaric state. I really mean that.
Dan, do you feel comfortable being in the center of attention? I mean, we talked a little bit about your background of kind of always being the outsider and being the rabble rouser who may be the minority. Do you feel comfortable right now that a lot of Illinois politics and on the conservative side, at least, seem to be running through you?
Well, I don't know if they're running through me, but I you know, believe passionately in what I believe, and I don't want to participate in the scams that are being run on Illinois families across the ideological spectrum. And so you're duty bound to speak out. You know, you're duty bound to say what you know to be true. If you want to look back and say, history will record me as having stood on this side of the skirmish line, and I'm comfortable with that. And so, you know, frankly, that's what I think about. And I don't live my lives in the minds of other people. I'm not looking for a title. I don't care about the approval of Republican Party panjan drums. So, you know, the hell with it. Especially at the stage we're at now, I mean, let's strip it all away and talk real frankly about the challenges we're facing, or, you know, I'll hop a bus to Nashville like everybody else, but I don't want to do that. And that's the sad commentary in Chicago and Illinois. People are being forced out of here who otherwise don't want to leave. There's no bigger indictment of the political class in this state than that reality.
All right, my last question is really about if the primary goes the way that the Paul Simon Institute said it's going to go, and the governor, the incumbent, is the Republican choice for the general election. Mm-hmm. Do you stand behind the Republican choice? Do you mount an independent campaign, or do you do a meeting at the state capitol and get on board?
Yeah, sure, a beer summit?
Yeah.
No, I don't think a beer summit is in the offing. Look, Bruce Rauner is Mark Kirk 2018. I mean, that's what's going to happen. If Bruce Rauner is the nominee, he will lose. He is not going to be the governor, whether it's whether that decision is rendered on March 20th or in November. He is a dead man walking politically, and everybody knows it. And so that's why it's great that there's an opportunity for a true conservative reform alternative in a way that there hasn't been, as I said, in my adult lifetime, in Jeannie Ives. And Republican Party primary voters should think very soberly about this decision and the implications of the decision before them on March 20th.
Dan Proft, a morning radio host over at WIND, is also behind the Super PAC, Liberty.
Liberty Principles.
Liberty Principles. And, of course, one of the leading voices for Illinois conservatives. Dan, pleasure to have you here at the Big Table.
Pleasure to be with you. Thanks, Justin.
All right, coming up, Cubs manager Joe Maddon. Talk about the documentary that's airing that features Coach. That's football. Coach. What do you call Maddon? Manager?
Skipper.
That features a skipper. It's on tonight on Channel 11. We'll talk with manager Joe Maddon, Cubs manager, coming up here right after the news. Thanks, Rob. It's a download here at 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up a little bit later, we're going to talk with the Cisco Center about their big Oscar party, the Hollywood and State Street party that happens every year, the 90th annual Academy Awards coming up this weekend. So we'll talk about that. And Tracy Baim's going to join us, longtime film producer, journalist. She is in the Gay and Lesbian Hall of Fame. Tracy Baim is going to join us. She's being honored at the event coming up here on Sunday. Well, tonight at 10 p.m., Channel 11 is going to show the documentary American Creed. The film stars Condoleezza Rice and historian David M. Kennedy as they explore what it means to be American. What are our unifying ideals? In a time where this country is deeply divided, what is it that we all stand for, that binds us, that brings us together? Through the one-hour documentary, these questions are explored through the stories of first-generation Americans, activists, and my next guest, Cubs manager Joe Maddon. Maddon tells the story of his hometown of Hazleton, Pennsylvania. He talks about his family, his connections to his hometown, and the divisions that are currently playing out over issues like illegal immigration and what he's doing to bring Hazleton together. Of course, Joe Maddon is in Arizona right now for spring training, but he joins us tonight on Download. Mr. Maddon, thanks for being with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, thanks for having me, man. How you doing?
I'm doing good. So how did you get involved in this documentary?
How did I get involved? Well, first of all, by creating the Hazleton Integration Project. I think that's what qualified as. Did that in 2010. I went back home. I really did not like the tenor of my hometown at all. My wife, Jay, was with me for a Christmas vacation. And so I decided at that time to really try to understand what I was seeing. And with that, what I was seeing right there basically was that everybody was afraid of everybody else. Infrastructure was falling apart. There was nothing going on. And people didn't like each other. So I researched it as much as I could while I was in town. And when I got back to California, I called my cousin Bob and Elaine, and we decided what we wanted to do is establish a community center that would help after-school programs for primarily Hispanic kids at that time, but for everybody. And eventually it's morphed into where you got the Hazleton Integration Project. So that was the genesis. That's how it began, and that's where we're at right now.
Yeah, and you know, you talk in the documentary about how baseball has been a way, not just being in baseball and learning about other people's culture, but the game itself. I mean, you can get along with and you can overcome a lot of your problems and obstacles when you are all unified in one goal of winning, and it doesn't matter what your race is, your gender, anything of that nature, when you're all on the same team.
Well, that's, I mean, listen, a big part of this was trying to get kids together. I mean, it's hard enough to get, it's almost impossible to get grown-ups to agree on anything anymore. But if you get kids out there without any predetermined prejudices, and just get them on the same athletic field, in the same classroom, in a post-school setting, I thought this is the place that we could really make some inroads. I thought if you get the kids together, the parents absolutely would have to follow. We've done a great job of getting the Hispanic group into the building so far. We just need to do a better job somehow of getting everybody into the building. And because that really, that's we just described the Major League locker room. I mean, we come from everywhere.
Yeah.
We just signed Yu Darvish. He's from Japan. I got a bunch of guys from Latin America and guys from all over the United States. And we cohabitate so well. And I don't understand why, as a culture, we cannot pretty much engender the same kind of response on a nightly or daily basis if you just come together as a group with a common goal.
Yeah, and you know, you talk in the documentary also about Hazleton, and it's so interesting too because we've all as baseball fans, and even in your introductory press conference at the Cubby Bear, you talked about the Hazleton way, the shot in the beer. We're learning a lot about Hazleton, Pennsylvania, here in the city of Chicago. But you talk a little bit about the identity. I mean, your grandfather was a coal miner, and coal was a big part of what Hazleton was, and when that went away, the city and its structure kind of lost its identity.
Yeah, lost our confidence. I mean, you lose your identity, you're going to lose your confidence. A lot of folks moved away. I think when I was a kid, population was between 35 and 40,000. I think it's down to 25 now, and half of that 25 is Hispanic. So when I was a kid, it was primarily Anglo-European, and coal was rocking, and everybody had a job. Downtown was flourishing, and it was the best place in the world ever to grow up, absolutely. And then when coal took a hit and there was an exodus, and they created industrial parks outside of town because 80 and 81 meet there to create some jobs. And that's worked to a certain extent. But when we were in charge of, you know, when coal was king, and there was a lot of prosperity in the area and a lot of fun. And so I think we lost our identity. We lost our confidence. We have to recalculate that and make a strong comeback.
Yeah, I mean, it sounds like what you would tell reporters after a losing streak. It really is the same.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, same idea.
It's true. It's the whole community. What do you do now? We were Hazleton. We used to be the Mountaineers, and we were, you know, we had this great economy going on, and we had this wonderful football team, and we were our schools were outstanding, and everybody wanted to live there and prosperous. When you're a kid growing up, you wanted to own a Cadillac. That's what it was all about. So it's lost most of that, and I'm telling you, man, it's about confidence. The whole world revolves around the world of confidence.
That's interesting. You know, for you, how do you keep Hazleton, obviously going back and doing the integration project and being there, but for you and the way that you live your life and your profession, everything, how does Hazleton, how do you keep it close to you? How do you use your background and your childhood as an adult?
Well, every day, every day. If you had known me, I just turned 64, but if you had known me like even 40 years ago, say 50, I really believe I'm pretty much the same dude. I hold to the same principles and values that I grew up with. I came from an Italian-Polish background heritage, a very tightly knit family, big family. You honor the holidays, had the reunions, everybody visit everybody else, and then the whole city was like that. I was raised by my parents, my aunts, my uncles, my teachers, my coaches, all the mentors. Everybody raised you back then. If you got out of line, man, somebody was there to kick your butt or grab you by the ear. I mean, they kept you in line. I mean, they did what you were raised by the entire community. So my point is, right now I remember that. I really enjoy where I'm at. I really feel fortunate and good about what I'm doing and being with the Cubs and the manager, but man, nobody knows what it took to get here and all the things that have occurred for me to get to this particular position. There's a lot of work involved, there's a lot of failure involved, and you got to just keep picking yourself up. And I learned that when I was 10 years old playing for the State Trooper Eagles, playing football quarterback. You know, you get knocked down, you got to get back up. And that began in 19. I owe everything to the people that raised me in Hazleton.
Cubs manager Joe Maddon on the line with us. He's part of the documentary tonight that's airing on WTTW at 10 o'clock. It's called American Creed. David M. Kennedy and Condoleezza Rice explore what it means to be American. I mean, obviously, you tell the story of being from Hazleton and the issues that are happening there and why you did the integration project back in your hometown. But when you hear questions, big lofty questions about what it means to be an American or what are the ideals that bring us together, I mean, does that get you thinking about what it means to not just be from Hazleton, but to be from this country and to, I mean, to be a, even to be in Chicago right now, a town that has a lot of different Americans from a lot of different backgrounds living under one zip code?
Of course. I mean, listen, the one thing I try to do is never take anything for granted, ever. And what you're talking about there, being an American, it's about freedom and freedom of choice. The fact that we could, you know, walk out your door every morning and you know you are free, basically a free person to make choices and decisions based on your values and how you view the world, and nobody's forcing anything down your throat. I think, you know, that, you owe that to my dad and my uncles, everybody that fought in the previous wars, all that stuff. I never, ever take that for granted. I still, in my bag, which is sitting right in front of me right now, I got my dad's angel hat in there, and I also got his field Bible from World War II. And I look at that stuff, and you remember, never forget where you came from, never forget who came before you. And I think that's pretty much at the essence of what we're all about here. And the moment you start forgetting that, the moment you start taking things for granted, freedoms for granted, anything, choices for granted, that's when we were going to run into trouble. So for me, every day, man, I say thank you. I walk out the door, I say thank you. I walk into Wrigley every day, I look up in the sky, and I say thank you to have this opportunity to live in this country where I can be free to make choices. I can work as hard as I want. I can attempt to attain anything I want. And from the beginning, I wanted to be a major league player and then eventually a major league manager. And if you saw where I came from and how I got here, you would have been in that long, illustrious line of people telling me I can never do this. But you don't listen to that, because this country provides opportunity every day, and it's out there if you want to take advantage of it.
Yeah, it's amazing to think about, because even knowing a little bit about your story and moving along the ranks to become, to get to your dream of being a manager and even the big leagues, not just with the Cubs, but in the big leagues, there is a lot of trial and error, failure, and having to start over, and a lot of crisis in confidence. As somebody who just preached to us about what it takes, confidence is the key to bringing Hazleton back, everything involved in it, how do you keep that confidence when things aren't going your way?
Well, I mean, that to me is rooted in experience. You have to believe in what you know, and you have to stay true to your beliefs and your systems and your methods. You got to realize it's not always going to be perfect. You got to realize you're going to lose sometimes. But if you're very confident in what you're doing and how you're doing, and you've been rooted or grounded in some really good teaching, and that's, we're talking baseball right now, I've had some of the best teachers and mentors this game has ever provided over the last 30, 40 years. So I've pretty much seen, honestly, so many, almost all the permutations of what happened in a game, between playing in it, rookie ball, managing all different levels, roving instructor, all kinds of major league coaching jobs. So I have a lot of confidence in what I do and when I do it based on failure, because I've tried it on backfields. I've tried it in outposts, Idaho Falls, Midland, Texas, Peoria, Illinois. I've tried it all these different spots, and I have a pretty good idea what I think works and doesn't work. But you know you're going to trip once in a while, but you can't lose that confidence. I always think about the power of 24 hours. You could have an awful day today, but in 24 hours you could possibly have your best day if you permit yourself to do so.
As you rise the ranks and you're now a World Series champion with the Cubs, I wonder how, as baseball, I mean, America changes, but baseball is a good example of the demographics are changing. The athletes coming in are from different countries. It's not a predominantly American sport anymore. As a manager who's had success at the highest levels, do you have to continually retrain yourself on how to deal with players who might be coming in from different backgrounds or might be 19 years old, and essentially continue your lifelong pursuit of having good relationships?
And if I could explain this properly, you need to remain contemporary in order to remain employable. Probably the best way I could describe it to you. Now, I'm not saying you force a different way or method or try to change in a way that's disingenuous, but you have to be willing to adapt and understand what's going on right now. Listen, I listen to the Spectrum all the time on Sirius, my music every day. Love hearing the new artists. I think they do a great job. I think there's a lot of good musical artists out there right now that I understand and I know about. And then again, it's not, I'm not forcing it. I just like to do it conversationally with my young. I got young players, man, but I talk to them every day, and we have very good, open and honest conversations. So I'm dealing with 20 to 30 year olds all the time. If you put yourself in a position, in a contemporary position, and keep open-minded and don't hide behind the old school thoughts and process all the time, and be willing to make changes when it's necessary, then you remain employable. Yeah. So if you're willing to remain contemporary, then you have a much better chance of remaining employable.
Now, that's beyond baseball. That's life, right? That's everything that you just said. The documentary airing tonight at 10 o'clock is called American Creed. It's on Channel 11, starring Condoleezza Rice, historian David M. Kennedy, and, of course, Cubs manager Joe Maddon, who joined us just now to talk about Hazleton, Pennsylvania, the Hazleton Integration Project, and his life and American ideals, living in American ideals. Joe, thanks so much for taking some time out to talk to us, and go Cubs.
Hey, listen, man, I really appreciate you having us on. For the folks, check the show out tonight. It's really, really well done, and I'm looking forward to the next chapter of this whole thing. But when you give me this opportunity to speak like this and really empty my mind, it really helps me out a lot, too, so I appreciate it.
Oh, we appreciate it, too. Love talking to Joe Maddon right there, man. Right? I mean, so, I don't know. You know, a lot of times, it's one way or the other. Like you get athletes or people who are in sports, especially our heroes who get in front of a microphone and they're not talking sports and you're not really sure what's going on. But with a guy like Joe Maddon, you're just like, yeah, I wish that the press corps in Chicago would ask him different questions. Like, I feel like he has a lot to say about his life, his struggle, his ability to overcome failures. It all, if you think about it, and everything he was talking about, that is everything that was on display when the Cubs won the World Series. Even just Game 7. This idea, everything he was talking about, losing confidence, what you stand for, this idea of overcoming failure and getting back up on your feet and being contemporary. That's how you stay employable. I'm not saying that all can happen and that part happened in Game 7, but everything you talk about with Joe Maddon. Is how is he able to wrangle every player that's under 24 years old? How does he get these guys to respect him and follow him? And at the same time, I mean, I watched a couple of things, not just a documentary that's really good. It's coming up here tonight, and I think you can get it on demand as well. It's a co-production of WTTW. But it means something to him. His hometown and his family mean something to him. And for them to have a crisis in confidence in Hazleton. It's amazing that he wants to go back and give back, and not just because of his celebrity status, but he really truly seems to have a connection to where he's from, and he wants to use what he's learned in that journey to help the people of his hometown. So that's pretty cool. Great to have him on. So, all right, coming up, we talk about the Oscar party to end all Oscar parties. The Siskel Center, we had this convo last year, and love it. So much going on in Chicago. I can't believe it's already Oscars time. Not that I don't want to go on my rant. I always rant about the Oscars because I'm like, I don't watch it. I don't really care. I don't care who wins. I didn't see any movies. Yeah, although I did see a couple of them.
You're not a big award show guy.
I'm not. And frankly, this year's awards season, especially with the Me Too stuff and everything that goes into it, it's excruciating to watch. Now, Ryan Seacrest is, there's talk. It was in the paper today that a lot of publicists are not going to stop at Ryan Seacrest on the red carpet because of the allegations of sexual misconduct. And yeah, it's a tough thing to saddle up on, with the popcorn and watch a celebration of a culture right now that is in disarray. A Hollywood culture that's in disarray. So I don't know, but that's not why I don't watch the Oscars. That's just that would be a current excuse. My whole thing is I'm just not a big fan of sort of celebrate me.
You don't like the in memoriam?
Celebrate me. No, I don't care about any of that stuff.
What if there's a big mistake like last year?
Yeah, but it happened, and I was like, meh.
Yeah.
No, you know what happens? There'll be a big mistake that we all have to talk about for 2 weeks. Did you see that last night? 312-981-7200. Did you see that last night? So make mistakes. We'll move on with our lives. It's a download here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman. Coming up at 10 o'clock tonight, the swap meet with Greg Flamm at DuPage Picker. If you got some junk in the basement or maybe in the attic and you think it might be worth something, maybe it's still in the box, doesn't have that tattered edge if it's like a cool poster and you're not like me where you duct taped everything to your wall and it's ruined. If you kept good care of your stuff, you call up tonight and Greg will tell you what it's worth. 312-981-7200. Well, it's here already. This Sunday is the 90th annual Academy Awards, and that means it's time for the Oscar party to end all Oscar parties. The Hollywood on State event is the longest-running Oscar party in Chicago, put on by the Gene Siskel Film Center. Revelers are encouraged to dress up, or dress down this year. You get to walk the red carpet. You get to watch the results with all your fellow cinephiles. This year, the Gene Siskel Center will honor some of Chicago filmmakers as well, including Tracy Baim, who will join us in just a bit. I love Tracy. In studio tonight, the executive director of the Gene Siskel Center, Gene D. St. Aubin. Gene, thanks for coming back.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
It's good to be here.
This last year, I learned so much about, first of all, I retain this information, that the Oscars, you told me last year, the Oscars used to have they had parties that were...
They had official parties around the country.
And they discontinued that, and because you guys were having so much fun with it, you just kept doing it.
Correct. Right.
Wow, so we retained some knowledge from this job, right?
I am totally impressed. I totally don't remember the conversation, but you're right. So must have happened.
Yeah. So last year we learned a lot about the party, so I don't want to retread because I'm sure the listeners have the same retain just like I do. But I do want to ask, obviously, there's a lot about the movies. We didn't really talk about the movies at all last year. We just talked about the event. First of all, let's talk about the Hollywood and State event. What is it this year that you're doing that was different than last year? And give us the elevator pitch on the biggest Oscar party in Chicago.
Okay. So first, it's at the Gene Siskel Film Center, which is at 164 North State Street. And we have two theaters. So you watch the Oscars on big, huge movie screens. In our new plush, we just got new seats and carpeting, so it's all
you guys were, it was a renovation going on, right?
It's all fancy-dancy. And what we're doing the same is tons of food, booze. We have Fago de Chao, Farmhouse, Rosebud Prime, Eli's Cheesecake. And for the price of a $100 ticket, you get all that all night long. And beer, wine, champagne. But what we're doing this year that's a little different is, a lot of people whine and complain. I just want to be in my jammies on my couch to watch the Oscars.
I don't want to go out. I want to do all this at home.
If people want to do Hollywood glam, which is what we have always done, but we're also giving people the option of doing vintage loungewear. So, that could be, a big silk kimono or big palazzo pants or that type of thing. So, men in smoking jackets.
Do my lounging clothes, vintage Chicago Bears Zubas,
no.
That wouldn't work?
Uh-uh.
That doesn't work?
I mean, I'm expecting we're going to see one or two of those, but...
They're really elegant. All right, so good. So the dress code. I would assume that it makes fun for everybody, with the free food and the free drink, that by the end when you get to the best picture, people are adequately sauced. Last year, we were just talking about this right before the news. It must have been interesting at the party with the mix-up with La La Land and Moonlight. What was the vibe like at the end of this party when there was a shocking revelation on the screen?
Well, people were quite happy by then. And there were a lot of Moonlight fans in there. And so, everybody, you can't not like La La Land either. So people were a little disappointed. And then when the very gracious guys from La La Land said, oh, wait, we're not the winners, and thank God they did that, and announced it was Moonlight, people were like, drinks and popcorn was flying in the air, and people were jumping up and down, and it was kind of crazy. It was very funny. And some of my very kind of staid board members, we saw what they're really like when they get excited.
You know, I wonder just to, you know, when you're throwing a party like this, and I didn't even think about this way, but do people come with support for certain movies? I mean,
totally.
So there's like a go sit with the Moonlight crew, go sit with the Shape of Water crew. Like, is that the way it works?
Oh, we don't move in packs or anything, but people definitely have their favorites. You know, I mean, Chicagoans are an opinionated bunch. And so everybody comes rooting for who they want to win.
So that's a big part, of course, when people sit down and there's going to be yays and nays on what won and what lost. You know, this year, this is a year. It was funny because right before we started the segment, I'm like, I don't even know the movies that have been nominated. I haven't paid attention. I'm not a big Oscar fan. But I've actually seen a lot of the movies because of this job. What are you thinking about this year? I mean, as we start to get ready to pick the winners, do you have certain favorites that you know are going to win from your perch at the
Totally. I'm an extremely opinionated person. I think for Best Picture, it's really just from everything I've read and the award shows that have already happened, it's really between Shape of Water and Three Billboards. I want Shape of Water. I thought it was beautiful. It was much more interesting. I mean, Billboards was okay. The performances are great. But to me, it was kind of a one-note film.
And the woman who is the star in Shape of Water was the mom in Paddington. So
that's cool.
I'm just saying, that's cool. I didn't know that. I went back and watched Paddington on Netflix the other day, and I was like, huh, is that the woman from Shape of Water? Wow. Yes.
So you're a big Paddington fan.
I'm not a big Paddington fan. It was a good movie, but I was like, oh, that's a great career trajectory. She's moving up. So
right.
I'm with her.
She's amazing. Yeah. You should look at some of her other indie films, like, you know, Maudie and
all that. Okay. So that's for movie. I mean, there's been a lot of talk about Best Director. There's Greta Gerwig is in the category for Lady Bird.
Mm-hmm.
And really, she continues to be brought up because, you know, there has been a lack of female representation when it comes to directing nominations at the Oscars. You know, obviously this year there's much more emphasis on making sure that there is, I guess, equality when it comes to gender equality at the Oscars after what's happened in Hollywood in the last 6 months or for all time. Talk about the director's category, what we should be looking for.
You know, it used to be kind of the rule that whoever directed the Best Picture, you know, they kind of went hand in hand, but that doesn't happen all the time now. So it could be different. I mean, I really think it should be Guillermo, as much as I love Greta Gerwig as an actress and as a writer and a director. But I don't, you know, it was a great movie. It was a fun movie. But I don't know if it's Oscar. You know, I mean, it's tough. Yeah, Lady Bird. You know, it's tough competition. They're really good movies this year, and they're really good directors. So, you know, I would put my money on Guillermo. But I also think it's kind of cool that in that category we have two people of color and a woman as in the best director category. So progress is being made. It's a little slow, but it's at least we're moving in the right direction.
In studio with me tonight is Jean D. St. Aubyn. She is the executive director at the Jean Siskel Center. They're having their big Hollywood on State event, the Oscar party, the biggest Oscar party in Chicago, the Oscar party and all Oscar parties. It's happening this Sunday, of course, and you can get all the information at the Jean Siskel Film Center website. All right, we'll take a quick break, and we come back, let's bring in Tracy Baim, who will be honored as one of the filmmakers at the event coming up here this weekend. So stay with us. It's Download 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman in studio tonight, the executive director of the Jean Siskel Center, Jean D. St. Aubyn, and they've got their big Hollywood on State event coming up this Sunday. It's the Oscar party, the biggest Oscar party in Chicago, and we're talking about the Oscars and what's going to be happening on Sunday. First off, I mean, I guess we should talk snubs since we didn't do that. Before I bring Tracy in, I mean, are there some in the community that say this movie should have been nominated or this actor should have been nominated?
Yeah, well, I think people, critics and just regular people like myself, we really feel Florida Project should have been in there.
That's a great film.
It was an amazing film.
It stays
moving,
with you too, yeah.
Beautiful. Oh, my God. It stayed with me for days.
Yeah.
So it's too bad. I mean, at least Willem Dafoe got in there, but the movie itself should have been part of Best Picture.
In terms of Chicago filmmakers, when we talk about some of the people who Laurie Metcalf is in there, of course, for Lady Bird. But who else from Chicago will be represented?
Finally, Steve James for Abacus. Is it Abacus?
Yeah.
There's so many.
That's an interesting film, yeah.
Abacus, Small Enough to Jail, which we showed at the Gene Siskel Film Center in quite a few runs because it just kept selling out. So that's nominated for Best Doc.
And that's a big one because Kartemkwin, the Roger Ebert film, was snubbed. The Interrupters, I guess, would have qualified with snubbed, and Hoop Dreams.
Yeah.
All three snubbed. So it's amazing that he finally gets on the nomination. They should just give it to him for all the times he snubbed.
Right. Yeah. So
is that how it works? It doesn't work that way? It's not like the NFL draft?
I think it works that way sometimes with actors and directors. But in the doc world, I don't think it works that way.
And the last thing is that you honor local filmmakers as part of this event.
We started doing this about 5 or 6 years ago because we wanted to shine a light on all the filmmaking that happens here in Chicago, which is quite a lot. There's a lot of hardworking local directors who are writing and producing and directing some amazing films. So that's why we call it Hollywood on State.
And I saw that Dinesh Sabu is going to be there, who is on the program. And also Tracy Baim, who is the executive editor at Windy City Times. She was a producer on the film Hannah Free. And she also is inducted into the Chicago Gay and Lesbian Hall of Fame and a great journalist, novelist, and movie producer. What don't you do, Tracy? Tracy, welcome to The Download.
I'm learning how to sleep. That's what I'm learning now.
Well, it's great to have you, and I'm glad that they're honoring you for your work. What's it mean to you to be honored as part of this event for the Oscar party to end all Oscar parties?
Well, it's a huge honor, and I feel, you know, quite under, achieving in this category. But I do feel that one of the things that, first of all, I'm a film lover going back to childhood and know how the impact of LGBT movies have had on my life. And as an editor and publisher of an LGBT newspaper for the entire period of time of 34 years I've been doing this, film has been a very important part of what we cover in our community. So I feel like, you know, I've made 4 movies, 2 feature films and 2 that are not quite feature films. One's a documentary and one's a poet in Chicago, just came out in December, Enina Jay. So all 4 of those, to me, were just a way to get another representation of our community out there that's different than newspapers. But I'm very committed to promoting the work of Chicago filmmakers. And, you know, just last Saturday was meeting with a young filmmaker, a trans filmmaker that's working on a web series to give her advice on her work. So I feel like I hope it's in the dual sense because I don't feel that accomplished as a filmmaker, but as a helper of others that do that work, I really have felt committed to that for a very long
Tracy,
time.
Well, Tracy, as someone who has, as you just mentioned, 2 features and other projects, how has Chicago been for you as someone who wants to be in film and has made films?
You know, there's 2 reasons I think Chicago is wonderful for film, especially young filmmakers, and that's that this community is not jaded about movies. You go to other big cities on the coast, and they've been there, done that, right? And in Chicago, you can find new funders and new crew members, new actors that have never done it before, and that spirit of togetherness on a set, on the 2 major features I did, just everybody coming together and the camaraderie. I've heard that's very difficult to get in Los Angeles and some other places. So that's certainly one of the reasons. The other is the talent of people here on crew and cast is phenomenal. The acting world here could produce a film a minute, as far as I'm concerned, with the amount of talent that comes out of the younger generation as well as the seasoned actors. So to me, that's the great reason for doing movies here.
Tracy, for your perch at Windy City Times and also being a longtime journalist and its editor in the LGBT community here in Chicago, how does the Oscars do with gay filmmakers? I mean, and actors and everything in between. I mean, the African American community will say there's not enough representation, and we've also had a long conversation about gender representation. How does the Oscars do with the LGBT community?
Pretty abysmal. I would say that white gay males maybe do a little better than other folks. This year, I'm very excited about a documentary, Strong Island, which is by a trans director, Yance Ford. It's a very personal documentary about their seeking the truth in their brother's murder in the 1990s. It's a fantastic documentary. And there's some, the director of the film Mudbound is an African-American lesbian, and Mudbound's gotten some recognition. I hope Mary J. Blige wins. So, you know, it's really, really difficult for anybody who doesn't fit that straight white male cisgender role in Hollywood. But I'm very excited about Call Me By Your Name and other potential films, like obviously Moonlight was a fantastic win for the community. So there are definitely periodic bursts of positivity like there are for women in general and people of color. I think that the Me Too movement has a dual purpose of not just calling to light the trauma that's existed for so many people of all genders in Hollywood for a very long time and all throughout. But I also just think it twists the table on having women and having a voice for other things as well. So I hope that it contributes to them getting more funding for more projects out there. You know, the successes of African-American, Latino women, all that has meant that filmmakers that are younger than them or behind them are coming up on their heels, and that's really fantastic.
Gene, one of the issues, of course, that has made the award season pretty subdued has been the Me Too movement, and we've seen a lot of actors, even who get up on stage, then the next day they're in the papers for misconduct allegations, and it's kind of put a damper on the party atmosphere around Hollywood with this award season. How do you deal with that when you throw a party about the Oscars and you want to be celebratory of the industry, but the industry is going through this turmoil?
Ooh, that's a good question. Well, I think I have to look at the Film Center and our year-round programming and feel very confident that we show a good range of films and we represent as many people as are making films. You know, the Oscar night for us, it's a fundraiser and it's a way to celebrate film. And we hope that, you know, that things change. I don't really know.
Yeah, I mean, I just wonder because you saw, I think it was at the Golden Globes or other places where everyone wore black, and it just changed the tenor and the tone of the celebration.
Right. Well, you know, I think there's a time to be a little more somber. You know, there were years when they didn't have the Oscars. I think it was, you know, like during World War II and different major, you know, international events were happening. And this is a big deal. So you can't ignore it, you know, and I don't think you should ignore it.
The executive director of the Gene Siskel Center is Jean D. St. Aubin. She is the woman who is throwing the Oscar party to end all Oscar parties at the Gene Siskel.
Not just me.
I know, but you're at the head. The Gene Siskel Film Center this weekend, right there on State Street, the Hollywood on State event, State Street event. One of the honorees this year will be Tracy Baim, who is also one of the producers, the executive producer of Hannah Free and other films. Tracy, thanks so much for joining us tonight, and I need to get you in studio for a longer conversation. And Gene, great to see you again, and we will
see you.
Have a great party this weekend, and we'll see you next year.
All right, Tracy, see you Sunday.
Thank you.
It's time for Swap Meet. Oh yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books or silverware. As long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman
and Greg Flam.
Here we are.
That's right. It's time for the Swap Meet here on 720 WGN. I'm Justin Kaufman, Greg Flam, at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. This is the segment where we have a lot of fun, where you have collectibles, memorabilia, junk. You tell us what you have, and Greg tells you what it's worth. And what do you want to brag about? That's my favorite part of the swap meet. And we didn't really talk about this, but I do have them here. I want to add an extra wrinkle. We talked about this last week, Greg, that I will give you a Lou Malnati's pizza listener, 312-981-7200. I have a pizza to give away. We shorthanded somebody on the worst earlier in the week. We're all good. And I have a pizza for the best brag.
Nice.
So you call in or text in tonight, and if I like the cut of your jib, or if I like what you're trying to brag about. Now, you have to know what I like. I enjoy the Chicago memorabilia. I like the stuff where you're like, I've got Mayor Daley's fingernail. What? That's crazy. That kind of stuff. So that's what we're talking about. Not necessarily mean anything in terms of money, but if it's something you want to brag about at the end of the hour, I'm going to give away a pizza to somebody. 312-981-7200. How are you, Greg?
I'm doing great.
Yeah? How was the week?
It was pretty good. It's short, you know, but the sales are coming up tomorrow. A bunch of them starting.
I've got a wooden Rastafarian that I picked up in on the beach of Negril. Is that worth anything?
You know, I was researching rum bottles because
the
empty rum bottles can sell for $30-$40.
You know,
and they could be empty. So I was going to say, I was looking up stuff like in Jamaica. Like
I'm not sure that they would let me take that back on the plane, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah,
there was a lot of tchotchkes on the beach.
Yeah, oh, I'm
a lot of stuff. I'm like, what? What do Greg thinks this is worth?
The airport,
312-981-7200. All right, so you bring stuff in each night for us. What do we got tonight?
Well, tonight the big item is the Carlton Fisk, like, more than life-size poster, I think.
Wow. Look at, first of all, wow.
Yeah.
Look at how big this
thing is. Probably the largest poster I own.
It is a 6 foot, it's his height, so he's 6'4", 6'3".
Yeah, it's life-size, yeah.
It's life-size, it's Kellogg's Frosted Flakes,
mm-hmm.
and it's essentially a ruler to
yeah, like to measure.
To measure your height. And my favorite part is it's Pudge in a brand new White Sox uniform.
72, yeah.
You would think that if I'm trying to place when he played for the Sox, but he definitely was on the team with the red, white, and blue uniforms.
Yep.
And then the next one, this is the classic, what they have now, the black and the 1993,
90s, yeah.
And it was the end of Carlton Fisk's career.
Mm-hmm.
But it is not the best fit on him. There's a lot of baggage
there is.
In different spots in those pants.
Yep.
It just doesn't look like, if you get a poster today of an athlete, you know, they put a little lotion on, they make it shiny,
yeah, the,
you know, maybe a little touch up, a little Photoshop, not here.
Yeah, the top looks a little shorter than it should be, like the shirt or jersey. But no, it's
awesome.
It's wild. When I saw it, I couldn't resist getting it. But I was really surprised, like, how low value it was. It was like a $12 poster online, and there weren't that many either. But that's kind of what they're going for, and you know, it is what it is. Now, what I'm trying to find out or figure out is, was it a promo from, you know, Kaminsky or U.S. Cellular, or was it through Frosted Flakes, like he mailed in for it? You know, that's what I'm trying to.
I don't know.
Decipher, but
it is huge.
That is
a huge guy. Pudge is a huge guy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
All right. What else you got?
Then just a couple other items. People collect license plates. So I found these 1965 Colorado plates in like mint condition.
Wow.
And they're not like reproduction. So there's a. And these are, you know, this will go for about 40 to 70 if you have a matching set, which this is. But people do all kinds. I mean, some people just collect the plates, but other people's cut out the letters, the numbers, and they mix and match and do stuff.
My dad was in the license plates at one point. There were license plates all over the garage. Like, okay, enough of the license plates.
Yeah, and it's no longer just collect a plate. It's all this repro stuff or repurpose. And then
you're
run of the mill, you know.
AM robot.
Yeah, IR12. And the odd thing is that they named, you know, not that it's odd, but it's most robots back in 1977, they were calling them male names. This one's got a female name, so that's cool. Progressive thinking there.
Progressive.
But anyway, Star
progressive
Command.
Robot thinking.
Yeah, so it's Star Command, and this is about $25, but I got it $4.
It looks so 80s.
Yeah,
It looks like what, you know, there's something great about what we thought robots were going to look like back in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you just look at all these toys, like, this is the future.
Yeah, even R2-D2 was kind of still that mold.
This reminds me of the movie Short Circuit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, so.
All right, 312-981-7200. We got some stuff coming in already, and we're going to get to it in just a second. Joe, stay on the line, and also the text coming through. 312-981-7200. And if you got the best brag, you're going to get a pizza tonight.
Uh-oh.
That's the ad to this week's Swap Meet. Stay with us. It's the Download 720 WGN, and we're playing Swap Meet tonight. Greg Flam is here at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. What do you want to brag about tonight? What memorabilia, collectibles you have? You want to see what they're worth? Greg can tell you. Let's start with Joe. Joe's on the line. Joe, what do you want to brag about?
Hey, it's Pan Cave Joe.
All right.
Let me tell you, I've missed you guys. What's it been, 4 or 5 weeks?
Oh, wow. Well,
you're a Wednesday listener,
you're a Wednesday, right?
Yeah.
We've been killing it on Thursdays.
Right.
Oh, so welcome back.
Yep, thanks.
Okay. I hope you can dig something up on this one. This is back in the day when men used to wear tie tacks.
Okay.
I've got the original silver tie tack that's about 2 inches long, and it's like a, well, it's like a submarine, which was given out to anybody that was on the initial cruise tryout, if you will, for the first American submarine that was atomic, the Nautilus.
Wow.
I'm just wondering if you can dig something up
on
that.
So it's a tie tack from someone who wore the tie tack on...
My dad.
Your dad. Oh, fantastic.
Oh, yeah. He was a chief hydraulic engineer.
Really? For the first American submarine?
The Nautilus, yeah.
Wow.
Out of Norfolk, Newport News, Virginia.
Wow. That's amazing.
I think it was in 53, if I'm not mistaken.
Okay.
I just recently gave it to my son, and I said, son, take care of this. This is going to go down in non-infamy. It's a real collectible.
And oddly, it's one of those things, again, we're going to scratch our heads over. There's a couple available between $15 and $32 you can get
them.
Yeah.
You're kidding me.
I'm not. I'm sorry to report that, but yeah.
Are these the silver?
Yeah, they're silver. I don't know what other information I can give you.
I wish this was like a game show where I could veto and hit a button and be like, no, Justin says, no, it's worth $500.
Yeah,
not how it works.
They do give a brand. It's Hickok, I guess, General Dynamics.
That's it.
Yeah. Builders. Yeah, you can buy one right now for $29. You can get
Are they plentiful?
No, there's a handful, not many, though. I'm only seeing two right now available, but there were about three that sold recently.
I'm sorry to hear
that.
Joe, good to hear from you, buddy.
That's a good one, though.
Yeah.
All righty.
Thank you.
Thanks.
All right. Well, let's keep going here. Let's go to the text. We've got a 708 says a 1954 Seberg W jukebox in good working condition. It's like the Happy Days jukebox.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that one recently sold for $1,000. I've heard them go for a little bit more than that if they're in great working condition, though. So depending on, they say it's in working condition, so maybe $1,400. You know, but people are selling the parts as well. So if it's broken, just part it out. And
everybody loves the Happy Days jukebox. Yeah. I'm a bigger fan of the dive bar jukebox. That's almost you look down at a glass table and that kind of thing, where you look in and maybe it's an 80s. Maybe they got a Hall & Oates and a Boys to Men.
Yeah,
you know, you get a one or a two on that thing.
CDs, yeah,
like in Johnny's Lounge on Lincoln Avenue back in the day.
Yeah, well.
Then you hit it and it doesn't work. That's one of ours.
Where's Fonzie when you need him?
Yeah, right. All right. 815 says, I got an autographed Tom Brady rookie card. Wow. And it's in a picture, too.
All right.
Tom Brady, it's a victory.
Okay.
Right, here we go. Victory rookie 2000, Tom Brady, who is at practice.
Okay.
Kind of jogging in sweats.
All right.
And classic 2000 Paris gray sweats. Not one of these cool sweats that you can maybe wear to a River North bar. You know, you know what I'm talking about?
Right.
The kind that gets bouncers in trouble. I'm like, you can't wear those in here. I'm like, dude, I paid $250 for these. Not those. These are classic gray George Costanza type sweats.
Without the signature, it's about a $75 card.
Wow.
Without the signature. In obviously great condition.
Yeah.
Signed, two recently sold that were signed, but I can't give you the exact amount because when it's best offer, they don't put that amount.
But it's going to be more than 75.
But they were asking 10,000. They took a best offer.
What?
The other one was 1,000 or best offer. So my guess is it was
$10,000 for a Tom Brady card.
Signed,
You know. What?
Yeah, I could show two of them here.
Wow, man, I just don't understand how this works. I don't know what it is. I would just think that Tom Brady would fall victim to the same thing as Ron Santo, where there's a million Tom Brady things out there.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know the rumor on how much
football,
he signs.
A football card. Who gives?
Yeah, it's that victory one, orange shirt, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Orange shirt and sweats. You see the sweats there?
Yeah.
Those gray sweats? Classics, right?
Yeah. Nice.
All right. We've got a hand-blown glass cane. It's from 630. Glass cane from the 1904 World's Fair in St. Louis.
That I need to look up.
What is that? A hand-blown glass cane.
Yeah.
Like a cane you would walk with?
I'm assuming, yeah.
Why would you want a glass cane to walk with? Wouldn't you think that breaks, man? Not only would you lose your balance, but you cut your hand?
Yeah, could hurt other people.
I don't like that.
Yeah.
I think maybe that's a flaw. Maybe it makes it worth more.
Laws were a little bit more liberal back then. 1904.
In 1907, they had the big recall on glass canes, right? Yep. All right, the 1904 World's Fair.
I can't find that. It, wow. You know, it does sound like a pretty rare item. That's cool. Why I'm not finding it.
That's
so
cool.
But yeah.
All right, ready to go?
Yep.
Let's keep going here. Tom, what do you want to brag about, Tom?
I have a Beatles 1968, the White Album, on a white disc. And I was just wondering, I've heard that there was only X amount made.
Okay.
And I was just wondering if that's true.
A disc? What do you mean, like CD?
Like color vinyl.
Album.
Yeah, he's got it in the white vinyl.
You got white vinyl 1968.
Yeah, at the White Album. Mm-hmm.
I like that one a lot.
Yeah, I've seen those before, and I just can't remember what they were selling. So I'm getting a price for you.
It's got Back in the USSR on that one. Dear Prudence is going to show up there, right?
Let's see.
Revolution. Yep. Revolution showing up on the White Album. Yeah.
Yep.
The song from the Nike commercial.
Not getting a white vinyl one, so
that's kind of like a white rhino, right? Same concept.
Yep.
All right, Tom, we'll look it up, man. Yeah, we'll see what we can do.
I'll have to keep working on that. I'll post it on Facebook.
All right, thanks, Tom.
Okay, man.
All right, thanks.
Yeah. All right, white vinyl. I'm writing it down.
Yeah.
That's a lead. I like that. I like the style of that. Right. I like where we're going with that.
Yep.
Marty, what do you want to brag about, Marty?
What?
Uh-oh.
What do you got?
Marty.
All right.
Marty.
It's me.
I didn't even know, but now I know. All right, good. Marty,
one of our regulars. Guys.
I love coming back to Wednesday nights. I don't know why we left. You're all here.
I'm here, and I'll be here listening again.
All right, what do you got? What do you want to brag about?
I won't waste your time. I have a Jody Davis, a wonderful catcher from the Cubs.
Jody Davis. What do you got?
A pin. You know, not a baby pin like a quarter.
Okay.
I have a regular Jody Davis, his picture, pin.
All right.
You know, like the people like to wear when they were wearing them on jackets then.
Well, how did you get that?
How did I get it? Yeah. I wore it when I used to go to the Cubs games when I was like, 15 years old. That's the only place my Greek father let me go anywhere.
So as a Sox fan, I'm happy to report you can get a Jody Davis button for $1.99.
$1.99?
Oh, really? Is that what it's worth?
But there are three different ones, but they're all under $10.
At least I got it in my collection.
Marty, don't listen to Greg on this
one. I'm biased.
Because you are the front runner
now.
You are the front runner for a free pizza. I'm going to send you, I can't do it yet until the end, but if someone could beat the Jody Davis pin.
Jody Davis.
You could beat the Jody Davis pin.
Could he put me on that list? Now, guys.
Marty, thanks for the call. Good to talk to you.
Hey, now, do you have my address? I got you.
We'll call you back.
Okay, I'll be here. I'm up. Wide awake.
All right, thanks. That's awesome.
She's the best.
Yep. Marty rules Wednesdays.
Oh, she rules. I love coming back to Wednesdays. This is like a family.
Yep.
Gia Joe coming out of the woodwork. Yeah. Little Marty. I really don't go to Thursdays.
You know, you don't know what you have until it's
gone.
We
have been doing Thursdays for 2 months, Greg.
Yep.
And it's good. The Thursday crew is good. It's so amazing to think that Wednesday's got a different vibe.
Who was the woman with the ladder that had to go up and check
her? I feel like that was Marty.
You think so? I was going to say, that's the only thing that can beat a Jody Davis pin, I think, at this point.
Marty's killing it, man. Marty, like I said, if you really want that pizza, you gotta come.
Yep.
Yeah.
You got to bring it.
Yeah. 312-981-7200. We'll get to the second half of the swap meet coming up here. We got some great stuff that's coming in here. But if you can beat a Jody Davis pin, and if you can beat Marty, go for it.
Mm-hmm.
Stay with us.
It's time for swap meet. Oh, yeah, here we go. Oh, another man's junk is another man's treasure, like a gold tape measure. When you were a kid and your fingers in your nose, today you're a picker. Oh, it could be comic books. Or silverware, as long as it's old, has no mold, there's value there. It's time for Swap Meet with Justin Kaufman
and Greg Flam.
Here we are.
That's right. It's part two tonight of the Swap Meet. 312-981-7200. Back on Wednesdays with the crew.
They're coming out.
They are. Great to hear from Joe and Marty in the first half there. 312-981-7200. What do you want to brag about? What collectibles or memorabilia do you want appraised? by our man at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. Greg Flam is here, but also, if it's a good brag, if you can beat Marty's brag, which was a Jody Davis pin, which, again, I want to make sure it's not a correlation. It's not how much it's worth, because as you said, the pin was worth $1.99.
Right.
But Marty saying that's the only place that her Greek dad would let her go, Wrigley Field, and she went, put the Jody Davis pin on her jean jacket, rolled in. That's some good stuff. That's anyway, the winner tonight with the best brag gets a Lou Malnati's pizza. How about that? Let's keep going. Second half starts with Scott. Scott, what do you want to brag about, bud?
I have a unique William the Refrigerator Perry refrigerator magnet that he actually signed while he was the paid spokesperson for a company called Big Ass Fans. So it's got his face on it. I've got his signature right on it.
Wow.
Hatton, where do you keep it? Do you have it like...
It's on the refrigerator.
No, it's not. Come on.
It's not sealed up in a box.
You just put it there and it... are people surprised? They come over and they're like, you're like, help yourself to the fridge. The first thing I'd be like, where did you get this?
And then I have a story to tell.
All right. You're ready.
It was at a trade show downtown in Chicago.
There you go.
Well, the... magnet itself, a refrigerator Perry magnet, goes for about $10.
You have to say it the right way. A refrigerator Perry refrigerator magnet.
Right. Okay.
$10. How much?
$10? $10. Okay. Signed is a different deal. I'm trying to look up what his signature goes for, and we can add that to that, I guess.
Oh, gosh. Am I in?
I always joke still alive? Might be he's about alive, 10 bucks. Right? Yes, he is.
Okay. Sorry. I didn't mean to be disrespectful to the fridge. I just can't remember the... I remember there was had a lot of health scares in the last couple of years, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah.
That's a good promotion. I always appreciate the tongue-in-cheek, the wink and the nod promotion.
And not all your athletes will do those.
Yeah.
You
get the fridge and maybe an Icky Shuffle. Right. You know, like Icky Woods would do something like that, mm-hmm. like for a Geico commercial. So, yep. Scott, thanks.
When you get to shake his hand, you find out just how big of a man he was.
I love it. I don't know if he's as big as Carlton Fisk in our studio right now. We've got a poster here. Thanks a lot, Scott. Appreciate it.
Thanks for calling.
You're welcome.
That's a good one. That would be my number two. If I were giving away two pizzas, that would be number two right now, just for the alliteration itself, the refrigerator Perry refrigerator magnet. 312-981-7200. Let's get back to the text now. I have this is 847. I have a 45 RPM record of Ed Burns and Connie Stevens singing Kooky Kooky Lend Me Your Comb. First record I ever bought and played on my new Admiral record player, which sucked, but that's another story.
Yeah, the record I'm finding for $3.50.
Great.
The
record. Right.
The player is probably worth quite a bit more if he still has that.
Okay. All right. So let's keep going. I don't know if he does. I have an autographed picture of Son of Svengoolie and a Showbiz Pizza token I got when I met him at an appearance at Showbiz Pizza.
Well, if you know anything about me, I'm a Showbiz Pizza guy. You know, I'm serious.
You know anything about Greg? He loves Showbiz.
I am serious. I collect all Showbiz Pizza stuff because...
Was that a local chain or was that everywhere?
I think they were everywhere. And
Connie's got a line in Gold Digger where he says, I got to take all their butts to Showbiz.
Yeah, and two things quickly. The band for Showbiz Pizza was called Rock or Fire Explosion. And
sure.
And anyone knows me knows I'm a big fan of the band. And it was invented by a guy in California, blah, blah, blah. But nowadays, what's happened is there's a game called Five Nights at Freddy's.
Yes.
If you have kids, you know all about it. And it was the takeoff of the Showbiz Pizza band. So.
Because they're like all animatronics. Yeah. You go in there and they get locked in and they come alive or something like that.
The premise, I guess, is you're the security guard or something at night.
The premise is it's for kids and nobody understands what's happening.
The biz to get in is developing games because that guy's making coin.
Yeah, he's got to be.
$20,000 a week. He's on like the fifth or sixth version of the game, and I heard at one point like the second version of the game he's making like $20,000 a week in downloads.
Wow.
Yeah.
I know he's spent half of it's coming from my son, I'll tell you that. Okay, so what about a Showbiz token?
The token's about $3.50. Those are pretty common. The Son of Svengoolie signature, I'm thinking about $15.
But the Showbiz Pizza token's really the...
Yeah, I mean, and if you look online, people are selling like buckets of these tokens, you know, for about $200. If you can get like 600 tokens, they're going. But people are buying them.
John, you're on the line. What do you want to brag about, John?
I have this Harry Carey Marquette. What is it? You know, the actual statue, the Harry Carey statue downtown at Wrigley. Mm-hmm. And they have, the artist made these small versions. They're called Marquettes.
Oh, wow.
Okay.
How big is that? So
it's sitting on my man. It's probably, the statue itself is probably 10 inches. With the base, it's probably 20 inches.
Okay. Wow.
That's cool. That's
it's
a cool.
It's identical.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
So it's got that bronzy look.
I held it tight during the, yeah. Well, yeah, I held it tight during the World Series. Come on, Harry.
Trying to get you a price.
Wasn't it the best thing, and while he's looking it up here, wasn't the best thing about Harry Carey and the Wrigley experience is that you could walk up those ramps and there was one way that you could get your head in there to go, hey, Harry.
Yep.
And he
hey,
would
everybody.
Yeah, and he would respond. Yeah, he would respond, or if he was on the air, he wouldn't. But the point being that there was a way that my dad had taught me when I was a kid that you could essentially get his attention from the ramps by yelling, hey, Harry.
Well, you know, the weekend games he would broadcast out in center field.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Those are just fun to watch just for that.
It's great, yeah. So what do you got? What do you got on
I'm
that
not thing? Getting any statues, no miniature statues of that.
There
so
you got a priceless one there, bud.
Yep.
All right, thanks, John.
I appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for the story. 815 says, I have an original Mrs. Beasley doll in its original box. Mrs. Beasley. What's Mrs. Beasley?
Vintage doll from the 50s or 60s, okay. I want to say. It goes for about $325 in the box.
Wow.
So that's pretty good.
Yeah.
But they are kind of readily available, you know.
773 says, four of the five Zords.
Mm-hmm.
That make the Omega Megazord from Power Rangers Lightspeed Rescue. I'm missing the blue Zord, which is the arms.
Yeah, and there's so many variations of the Megazord stuff, but they do get a lot of money. Some can go for, you know, if they're in the box, about $2,500.
Really?
But if they're out of the box, you know, probably a fourth of that. But they're still, you know, I told the story before, I found a metal foot of one of the Megazords. It was a smaller scale one, and just sold the metal foot truck part for $56. So okay. I mean,
again, what are we doing here? I don't even know. I feel like I just lost in a
Joey
sea.
Davis
of,
button $350 or whatever.
Not even $1.50.
Yeah. So
all right, is it LaVon? LaVon, what do you want to brag about?
Hi, Dustin. How are you tonight?
I'm good. How about you? Is it? I get the name right, LaVon?
Yeah, you did, LaVon.
Okay.
I was calling because we flew out to Detroit to see the Pistons when Barkley was on and Michael Jordan for the playoffs, and we had box tickets, and Michael Jordan was in the airport on a payphone, and he signed my Palace tickets, and I don't know if they would be worth any money.
Wait, okay, so he was he on a call, and you just walked up to him with the tickets, and he's like,
he
he's just so used to it?
Well, it was after the game, and we were flying home that night. We just flew in for the game and flew back. And he was on a payphone, and I just kind of hung around there. And as soon as he got off the phone, I asked him if he would sign my box tickets, and he did.
Did they win that game?
I don't remember. I don't think they did.
So at least he was nice enough to do it. I mean,
he only did like three people. He usually doesn't sign people's autographs.
No, and I wonder, you know, obviously that's a different time that they would walk through the airport. Like, did they still do that? Does LeBron James actually...
I don't think they do anymore.
Go to gate K-12?
Sitting on a payphone nowadays, huh?
A payphone.
At the airport. I love it.
Yep, it was in Detroit.
That is a good one.
I tried specifically to find Detroit ticket stubs and cannot do that, so I'm going to go back to...
Well, they're really cool tickets. They're kind of big. They're white with gold on them and stuff.
Yeah,
I don't even think the Palace is there anymore.
No. They moved on, right?
Yeah.
All right, we'll look it up, LaVon. Yep, thank you for calling. We appreciate it. Thanks for the story.
Okay.
Thank you.
The white vinyl, while you're looking that up, the white vinyl white album from the Beatles called up earlier, that's worth... $300.
Yeah, upwards of 300. Yep.
So there you go. Yep. All right, let's take a break here. We'll come back. Well, LaVon, we'll check into that a little bit. We've still got some other people. Jerry's on the line. We've got Lake Geneva Dan. I love that. Is that your full name?
Monikers, right?
Or that could be where you're from. I don't know. I don't want to judge. I don't know. Maybe that's a full name. Maybe Dan's his last name. Lake's his first. Geneva's his middle, you know? We'll get to all you guys in just a second. 312-981-7200. Stay with us. swap meet at DuPage Picker for Mr. Greg Flam. We are evaluating your memorabilia, your collectibles tonight, seeing what they're worth. We're also adding an extra wrinkle, which is what you want to brag about. And if it's the number one thing, you get a pizza from Lou Malnati's. Let's keep going. Lake Geneva, Dan, kick us off. What do you want to brag about, Lake Geneva, Dan?
Thanks, guys. This is Dan in Lake Geneva. Two inbox sets of lawn jarts.
Yeah.
Brand new with sales receipt.
Wow.
83.
That's contraband. That's the, yeah, you want to be, you don't put those in your car, get pulled over by the Lake Geneva's finest.
I think I put one through a car hood when I was a kid.
I told my story before. I had Mr. Quarterback that threw a football, and we rigged it to throw his lawn jarts.
And, I don't know why they banned these guys.
You're right. Why? You know, why? But no, they go upwards of $165, so that's a pretty good deal. I mean, if you have the box, I'm assuming you said you still had the box with the receipt.
Boxes, nice. One brand new, never used.
Yeah. Wow.
Yep. Surprising.
That's black market stuff, man. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I'm surprised eBay still allows those.
Yeah.
Okay, buddy, I'll let you go.
Thanks. You're going to have to go to one of those Lake Geneva bonfires that are up in the mountain. You know what I'm talking about? And like go up there and just kind of show up, and everyone's like, what's this guy doing? And be like, in long jarts, anybody?
Yeah.
You could probably get $200 for him.
Okay, bud. Yep.
Thank you.
All right, thanks, Dan. Bye-bye. All right, there we go. Jerry, what do you want to brag about, Jerry?
Hi, I have a signed Michael Jordan baseball.
Yeah.
Okay.
I like that a lot.
Me too. I hope it's worth a few dollars.
Well, I'll bet you it's not. Just basically, because whenever somebody says, I think it's worth something, Greg bursts our bubble with that.
I'm that guy.
But a Michael Jordan baseball, is it signed like when he was, where'd you get it?
I bought it. Actually, I didn't buy it. Somebody bought it for me as a gift a long time ago, and it came from some sports celebrity memorabilia. It's a certificate of authenticity, whatever that means.
Sure. It means it's authentic.
Yeah, they go
certified.
upwards of $900. So.
Wow.
Yeah. So
really?
Not bad. Yep.
There you go. Here's what I would do.
If I sold it, would I get $900? Or?
Not exactly. I mean, the highest that one is sold is $900. The lowest has been about $100. So you got a big range there.
And Jerry, what you have to do is before you take it to wherever you're going to get to sell it, you got to go hit a couple off the garage with it. Just, right. Just get it a little scuffed up so it's real.
No, it's authentic. It's in a plastic case.
No, right. I'm just joking with you. Don't take it out of there. Go play catch on the side of the house and then go see if you can get what it's worth.
Oh.
All right. Well, good luck with that, Jerry. It sounds like it could be some good money. Appreciate it.
Thanks a lot.
Good night. All right. 312-981-7200. Let's go through some of these. We got a Singer sewing machine. 312's got it. It's an old black sewing machine. Looks like it. Wow, man. I don't even know what that. There's no date on it.
Yeah, the year is kind of important on that. I'm trying to find it by looking at it.
Singer Manufacturing Co. There's a serial number, but I don't think. Okay, we'll move on.
Yep.
I've got four Michael Jordan dolls in the box, starting lineups. Three are in Bulls uniforms, one in his North Carolina uniform. Never opened.
Yeah, no clue on that.
Starting lineups, I don't think that those are worth a lot.
Yeah.
Are they the starting lineups?
Not really. I mean, a lot of them are $10, so.
I would just think that.
But if they're still in the box, did they say signed?
Not signed.
Not signed, yeah. I don't know. I'm four, maybe $200, maybe.
815 says, I have Cubs radio that clips to your ear and only plays WGN radio.
Now, that's tugging awesome. At my heartstrings. That's what I look for.
Not worth much, but it's cool and it plays your station.
It is cool, and it's about $10.
The best part about that thing, if it still works, it'll be a Cubs radio, and in just a couple weeks, it'll be White Sox broadcast.
Right. Yep.
Change something. That's going to make whoever created that radio's head spin.
Yeah.
Right?
Nice.
All right, we'll keep going here. Let's go to Dylan. Dylan, what do you want to brag about, Dylan?
Hey, guys, I've got two, if I may.
Sure.
Okay.
I've got a signed Chicago Blackhawks hockey puck from the actual game that my mom got when she met Bobby Hull in 1970 on Valentine's Day with his autograph on there.
Wow. Where did they meet at the stadium? Or is this a Valentine's Day date?
Yeah, she did. She did. She had a really good contact who introduced her to Bobby after the game, and he signed it. And I've got that puck.
Wow.
And I've got a second one for you. You ready for this one?
Yeah,
1948 All-Star Baseball with the entire team, but in the center of the ball is Ted Williams' autograph.
What? Wow. Where do you have that? Is it like in a case kind of thing?
I do. I've got it in a baseball case. It was given to me by a neighbor back in the late 60s.
Wow, that's great. I love that.
That is amazing. Hockey puck is $25 to $35. There are people asking for a lot more, but realistically, like what they're selling for is $25 to $35. So
okay.
Let me ask you this though: it does have the Valentine date on there and everything from that era, and I've got that. Like I said, I've got that one encased as well. I mean, wouldn't that carry a little more cachet?
Yeah, it probably would.
What about the All-Star baseball?
I'm trying to find that. And that's amazing, all those signatures on there. And then,
interesting.
Yeah, Jimmy Pearsall is actually on there. Buss Susie is on there. Does that name ring a bell?
These are
old-time guys, you know? I believe Hank Greenberg might be on there as well. I'm not looking at it right now, but, you know, my favorite signature is, you know, obviously Ted Williams, Teddy Baseball.
All right, we'll look and see what we can find, Dylan. Thanks, buddy.
There's a couple on there.
There's one right now they're asking $1,200 for.
Wow, that's amazing.
And I would think it might be a little bit more, you know, but that's what they're asking.
All right, let's give away this Lou Malnati's gift certificate. Lou Malnati's is the home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza. Find one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations or order online at loumalnati's.com. It's a no-brainer at this point. There was a lot of great stuff tonight, and I think that the incentive of the pizza is good. But we're going to give it to Marty for her Jody Davis pin. And the story that went behind it. Marty wins our inaugural pizza here in the swap meet.
Congrats.
Greg Flam at DuPage Picker, both on Facebook and Twitter. Where are you going to be this week?
I'll be at the Flea up in Wolf's Flea Market, Palatine, Saturday and Sunday, 8 to 4, wolfs.com with two Fs.
All right. We'll see you next week, bud.
Thank you.